Hey, everybody. Joel Radio with you. How you doing today? Welcome in.
Greetings, America, and all the ships at sea defending Hawaii from large cocktail drinks.
There it is.
Tiki bars all over the Hawaiian island chain being defended by our nation's Navy right at this moment.
Joel Radio with you.
Give a shout out to the Rim Pack.
What up?
That's right, the Rim of the Pacific.
This is a special show today, hence special music.
Yeah.
Although you're like, what is this fucking goddamn music?
Want to give big ups to all our fans in Yellowknife, Canada.
Yes.
Swansea, Wales.
Oh, okay.
Lillehammer, Norway.
Okay. Good.
Keokuk, Alaska. Wherever we are.
Welcome to you guys.
Over there at the Ford's plant on Van Dyke.
Yeah, those guys. We got to
shout out to
about
the Ford's
those guys. But today is our...
I work over at Ford's.
That's what they say.
Notice people in Michigan add unnecessary, you know,
information. Education, maybe?
So I went over to Myers.
Well, was Myers ever actually have an F?
No, it's always been Myers.
It's always been...
I guess it's the possessive of Myers.
Well, Meyer used to be Meyer Thrifty Acres, which was a plural. So, anyway, let's get into it. Well, this is the Planet of the Apes podcast, Corey. This is our special, and that's why I dug up this song for everybody. This is
by Rick Dees. What is this? the Disco Ducks.
This is the song is called Planet of the Apes, but it's from one of those. It's from a 70s disco Star Wars album.
God.
You know how they made the disco tie-ins to Star Wars?
That's horrible.
So they tacked on a bunch of other sci-fi themes, and this is a disco take on Planet of the Apes. That's why you hear apes grunting, and I don't think that has anything to do with the movie, actually. But anyway, I thought that
was
a great theme.
Wasn't there like a Sesame Street disco album?
Well, yeah, in the 70s, they discoed everything.
Dancing Grover.
Well, there was, you know, there were disco, they took the Beatles records and made those disco. If you want to hear those, I could dig those up for you.
I
know. You know, the Stars on 45 was a big deal.
Uh-huh.
You know, they made, you know, even into the 80s, they were making, you know, dance, you know, Born in the USA, the Bruce Springsteen album, had dance remixes of its various singles. Were, you know, completely against,
you know,
what Bruce was trying to do, but the record company made him,
beautiful,
and they put him up.
It was Take Your Kids to Work Day today at this TV studio.
Yeah.
I see these beautiful children, these delightful little globs of joy, so wide-eyed and open to the world and its possibilities, and I go, you'll never know what novelty disco records are.
No.
Like. You'll never know.
Well, there might be something dumb that's coming down the pike that they will have to look back on and laugh about, but I'm not sure what.
Oh, I know what it is.
Oh, you know what it is.
And NBC devoted 2 hours of its network. The FCC licensed this and allowed this on the air. Like, I don't know, what was Monday night, Tuesday night, something?
Okay.
Miley Cyrus Bangers.
I did see some of them. I did see some of that. It was Sunday night.
2 hour special.
And they did a very good job of not promoting that at all or whatsoever, apparently.
No, they just slipped it on the air.
They just put it right on.
That's good, because she didn't do a very good job of preparing her voice to sing. I mean, it was really bad. Like, okay, the spectacle of it was interesting.
Sure.
Because you're like, what is she doing? There's Muppets. She's doing crotch shots every minute. You think she's about to shoot a ping pong ball out of her baby cave and hit a kid in the third row. But she's just dancing around. She's wearing like these, like, if you could make a figure skating costume slutty, that's basically what Miley Cyrus wears, right?
If you could wear that with sexual intentions as opposed to whatever stupidity faggery
figure
skater wears.
Not doing gymnastics. You're like, I'm down to bone.
Right.
Then that's what she wears.
Right.
I got like one channel.
All right.
Anyway. But there's like, so this Miley Cyrus Bangers tour just infected our television. And it was just, but you know, of course, my wife couldn't look away. She was like, you know.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, okay.
She just could not.
Your wife had to watch it.
She's like, this is kind of incredible. It's bizarre.
I saw some of it, but you know, that's what a concert is now.
Yeah.
And it's weird because these pop stars don't, and one thing I noticed is that they don't have enough songs to sustain the show, so they do lots of covers and stuff.
Yeah.
And like she did Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, and there was a J-Lo thing on the other night, and she was doing covers.
She did Dolly Parton's Jolene.
Everybody does covers now
because
they don't have enough songs. So, She did really awful
versions.
She did
a Kanye song.
That's what's sort of weird about. Because I've seen some of these old hip hop acts,
right,
that had like one hit, and they just do everybody's hit when they go out.
Oh, I saw Biz Markie opening for De La Soul.
Okay,
if you'd like some white music for white people.
Okay,
if you'd like some '90s hip hop, I saw them in like 2000s sometime.
Yeah,
and he just came out and spun records.
Okay, yeah.
And, you know what I mean? Like, look, Biz Markie just, like, played and goes, y'all remember this one?
Yeah.
And just, he, like, mixed down stuff and, like, throw sound effects in it.
Yeah.
He just did a DJ set, okay. And then he did, like, Just a Friend.
Yeah.
Or
I've seen him do Just a Friend at the Gathering.
I think he did, like, two songs that were his.
Somebody, when I was at the Gathering, somebody said Biz Markie sucked and stuff because he couldn't remember the words. And I'm like... He's kind of a retard. That's the whole gimmick.
Did you punch him in the throat?
No, it was fine. He was fine. But I saw, like, Naughty by Nature just came out, and they just started doing Jump Around by House of Pain. They're just doing like, all kinds of other hip-hop
stuff.
You're
confusing hip-hop for music. I mean, in terms of...
Right, yeah.
It's, like, a different thing.
Right.
It's not,
I'm saying,
like,
even pop music, though, those guys, you know, they're big, and so they do arenas. Like, I know somebody, the Macklemore, did a tour last year who had, like, one record out. And he would play, like, his big song at the beginning, and then, like, I don't know if it was Thrift Shop or the other one, or Can't Hold Us. So he played it at the beginning of the concert, and then he played it at the end of the concert.
Yeah.
Because there wasn't enough there to do more stuff. But, yeah, I saw some of that Miley thing. And, she's one of those people that is, you know, of the moment. She gets a lot of attention. But there's no, you can't look at that. It's nothing more than fashion. There's nothing aesthetically about it that is better or worse than anything that came before.
The singing is terrible.
Well, the singing is awful, but it's compared to
no,
know,
it's Madonna's act,
right? It,
in,
that's sort
it's
of what
a
it
modern,
is. Yeah. Right?
It's just the modern version of you know.
Sure.
Remember
but Taylor
when
Swift kind of does the same show. It's a little less sexual, but she does a show that's a bunch of nonsense. Katy Perry does her show, which
I
is a bunch of nonsense.
I saw Michael Jackson in like the Bad Tour.
Yeah.
And he had about 14 costume changes and like 32 dancers and came out of a riser in the middle of the floor.
And Michael could just stand there and sing if he wanted to, but he doesn't, doesn't want to do that.
Interested. You know, the dancing.
Okay.
Michael was really a dance artist as well, so it was like, but whatever.
Yeah, Miley ain't dancing for shit, right?
Miley's dancing isn't all that good. She's got like all these like people in koala costumes or, you know, like people in these weird furry outfits dancing around.
Right.
She had a giant Muppet. At one point, she got on a hot dog, like a giant hot dog, and she rode it into the sky.
Really? Fuck.
And I said, how is that not the encore?
I was working on that for my comedy act.
Right,
I guess
I can't do that
now.
She
fuck.
Was like, I'm going to jump on Mr. Wiener. And she's this kind of...
I kind of need clips from this. I don't know if your description
You need
I could
see.
Get the show. I just I would have to pull the clips. I don't know.
At one point, like, and she's got all this backdrop stuff and like... It really looks like what you'd see at a head shop. There's like, it looks like.
Well, it's a lot of like weird, like, it's hey, like, this doesn't make sense, but we're just going to throw it together because it's just to be weird.
One song, it would look like black velvet paintings that would be at a head shop of like mushrooms and stuff.
Yeah.
And then she had a John Kricfalusi video.
Okay.
The guy who did Ren and Stimpy. Sure. Spumco obviously animated a thing for Miley.
Yeah.
And it was like her tongue and she was wrestling things with her tongue and it was just.
You saw a lot of this.
Oh, I
special.
Watched a lot of this.
You watched
bangers.
A lot of this because I
and
saw.
And then they cut it.
I
with
saw
like
6 minutes of it or something.
They had like the behind the scenes footage of her. I don't know how old her sister is, but she's like 13.
Yeah.
Hanging out and Miley's like in her underwear the whole time, like doesn't put clothes on. Yeah. By the way, this is the only person who has G-rated breasts that I've ever seen.
Miley's breasts.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you mean? She's not showing them.
No, but she's just so boyish.
She's shown them in other pictures. I've seen pictures of her breasts.
Maybe they're PG rated.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like, you're saying that they're so not tits. That
they're so unsexual.
They're not turning you on.
I don't find Miley, like, as much as she turns around and, like, presents her ass like a, like a baboon in heat.
Sure.
And does that, like, come bang me. Yeah. You know that angry porn face?
Yeah.
They're like, come on, dump a load in me, and they're like, kind of mad about it, and like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's some of these girls that you know, you could name Sasha Grey, you could name the girls that excel at this.
Sure,
the angry porn face. She makes that at the audience, and then it's like, hey y'all, koala bears, and She's always wearing a backpack. It's the weirdest spectacle.
It is weird. It is sort of like weird sort of Japanese kind of stuff mixed with like drug, you know, stuff, club
culture.
It's all
about weed.
Yeah, it's sort of club culture, though. That's what's going on, you know.
Is that what goes
on? Neon
there?
Colors and teddy bears and stuff, and it's all...
Is that what goes on in Ibiza?
Ibiza?
Ibiza. Is that... Ibiza? It's called Ibiza.
I guess.
But the Brits call it Ibiza.
Ibiza.
Right. It's the
I think it's a TH, but...
Right, but it's spelled Ibiza.
Yeah, but it's a TH sound, I
whatever.
Think.
And the Brits... And that's the island where they all... That's where, like, all the gay guys in England go to bang on
Well, it's a
cocaine.
Resort, and they have a lot of, like, techno, like, rave
right,
culture,
right,
house
sure.
music, that kind of stuff. EDM. Electronic dance music.
Yeah, EDM.
That's what it's all formed under, EDM.
Uh-huh.
It's all been...
You know, I got to tell you about the whole thing about EDM.
EDM, yes, Corey.
One of my best friends, he was stood up at my wedding.
Yeah.
Used to be a promoter at Motor Lounge.
Yes.
He was then editor of Herb magazine, which covered hip-hop and electronica. Yeah. He's a DJ himself.
Yes.
Been into that music since, like, he was into indie rock, and then that wasn't getting him pussy. And he started going to raves.
Yeah.
And I used to go to this stuff.
Yeah.
And I swear to God.
I went to that club.
Yeah.
Yeah, I went to
that
club.
Motor was a fun place
to
be.
And they
be.
Would have rock bands there occasionally.
It was
but
a really fun place to just hang out.
I've been there many times.
I could just go and hang out at the bar and stuff because I knew everybody there. Sounds like the exact same goddamn music they were playing in 1994.
Pretty much. Yeah, I mean, it changes, but, you know, it's, now it's mainstream, so it's not, you know, it's not, whatever people were doing back then is now just been exploited by more people, and people are open up to it. So it's one of those things that, you know, it's an underground culture that goes mainstream and then collapses, and then something comes and replaces it. And we saw that in the 90s.
Well, what's
going to
replace it? Because it's still the same stuff.
No, I'm saying something will replace it on the underground. And as that stuff becomes popular, then that will replace it in pop.
I mean, like, hip-hop does not sound the same now as it did in 1992.
No, not at all.
But maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm the yokel.
Yeah.
But I can't determine. I hear it, and it all sounds like pretty much the same stuff.
But don't you feel that hip-hop, though, what is called hip-hop now is so mainstream that what people were doing then, which was an alternative to what was being done in the mainstream,
yes.
You know, it's not an alternative. So it all sounds the same because it all, whatever sells, people copy. And that's why it all sounds the same. When nobody's selling, like, there's no reason to copy an act that's not selling any records. I mean, you have artistic reasons, but in terms of, like, commercial reasons, there's no reason to copy something that's not successful.
Sure.
So nothing will sound like, you know, you can sound completely, like, we sound completely original. Because nobody's copying us.
No, no one's listening.
As you just named off 50 international cities that are listening right now.
All right.
But no, but I'm saying, like, you know, if something gets popular, everybody copies it. So then it all starts to sound the same. That's why that
I'm
is.
I'm saying it's always sounded the same to me. I could
yeah,
never
but it doesn't,
tell the
no,
difference.
Dance music is definitely different, although you could argue that it's still awful. Because you never liked it anyway, even when you were hanging out at the Motor Lounge. You thought it was terrible. Be honest.
I mean, I would tolerate it, but it was not like...
But, I used to go to, like, City Club in 1990, which is, like, when people talk about, like, house music, like, that is, like, the most legendary lineup of DJs, like, that club had at that time. Mm. Was like Kevin Saunderson and all these Derek May and all these Detroit legends. They were all spinning, and we used to go there, and, you know, they'd play like an hour of, like, like dancier stuff like New Order and Nine Inch Nails and that stuff. And we would get into that, and then they'd go back to playing house music, and we'd get bored and sit around until they put the Stone Roses on or something.
I mean, I
so
can,
we used to sit through their sets and be completely bored
I
out
can
of our minds.
I can nominally determine the difference between styles of EDM.
Sure.
You know, house and jungle and you know, whatever, ambient. But, like, I can't tell what's good.
No?
Some guys are like, oh, this is amazing. Get to hear this. And I go, that sounds like the other track you said was shit.
Sure.
There's really no way to tell.
You can't tell what's good and what's shit. What if I win it?
In that kind of music.
Oh.
I have no ability to... You know, okay. Any other kind of music, I think I could kind of go... Well, this is the better than that. You know, even if it's something I don't like. Like, I know that, I don't know, Keith Urban is probably better than Toby Keith. I don't know, you know, like.
Really?
I don't know how to make that distinction, but you know what I mean? Like,
okay, so you're saying you can tell the difference between... Can you?
In country music, I think I can.
All right, well, give me a challenge. Give me an... well, give me... How about I just play something and you tell me if you like it or not?
How about that? Keith Urban and Toby Keith. Tell me which one's better.
All right, let's find a Keith Urban song. I'm just going to go and give you the top Keith Urban song on Google Play Music.
All right. That.
Keith Urban. I go to artist Keith Urban, and I'll play you the top Keith Urban song. Okay, it's something called Cop Car. I don't know what this is going to sound like, people, so I apologize if it sucks, but here's Keith Urban. Keith Urban with Cop Car.
Was this recorded under a bridge?
Live, Joel Radio, bringing you the hits. All country, all the time.
We drove right past that no trespassing sign. We sat on the tailgate.
Now, he's Australian as well.
Right. Watch the planes take off.
We thought we had all night.
There was no need to rush. That's when those cops came pulling up.
And you want to wait for the chorus of this?
Yeah, I might as well at this point. We've committed.
Your daddy's going to kill me.
Your daddy's going to kill me.
But if I survive tonight, I wouldn't change one thing. Baby, I know it sounds crazy, but there was something about the way the blue lights were shining, bringing out the freedom in your eyes.
I mean, I hear a melody in this.
I was too busy watching you go and watch
it, it's a pop song. It's just really playing.
You were thinking they're running for it.
Well, this has good story. It has programmed drums. I mean, it's not like a real drummer. So
no.
I was thinking you were crazy.
Okay, do you want the Toby Keith now?
Sure.
Again, I'm just giving you the number one song on Google Play Music. This is called Courtesy of the Red, White, and Blue, I guess.
Oh, that's the big one.
Is this the
big
one?
This is the big 9/11 one.
Okay, well, this is the top one. I mean, I could give you... Actually, you know what? For some reason, it skipped in and it went to Beer for My Horses.
Okay, good.
So this is what we're listening to right now.
You know which one you like better already.
Well, this sounds country, but the riff itself is a Rolling Stones riff.
Sure.
But it sounds country. For whatever reason, the...
You know why? It's just a fiddle.
Yeah.
Really, man, come on. 6 o'clock news says somebody been shot. Somebody's been abused. Somebody blew up a building. Somebody stole a car. Somebody got away. Somebody didn't get too far. Yeah, they didn't get too far.
Which one?
All right, this is tougher than I thought. I've talked a bunch of shit.
I think I have a winner. In my mind, I can tell you who's
better.
You
know what I love about country guys?
Yeah.
When they really overpronounce, like,
yeah.
Somebody got away.
Yeah,
somebody got in
but
a
honestly,
car.
That's what makes it sound. You know, the reason there's something with
country.
The guitar sound that they sort of made it twangier and less harsh, which means it's a Rolling Stones riff, but it sounds like country. His vocal, if somebody else sang that, you know, if Billy Joel sang that, it would sound more rock and roll than if Toby Keith is singing it.
Pappy back in my day, son, a man had to answer.
Oh, that's Willie.
That he done. Take all the rope in Texas, find a tall old tree, round up all of them bad boys, hang them high in the street. For all the people to see. That justice is the one thing you should always find. You gotta saddle up your boys, you gotta draw a hard line.
Now we'll just listen to the chorus and then we'll go back.
We'll sing a victory tune and we'll all meet back at the local saloon. We'll raise up our glasses against evil forces, singing whiskey for my men, beer for my horses.
All right, I have a definitive winner.
Okay, that's Beer for My Horses,
I have
right?
a definitive winner of who...
Now, was that Willie Nelson was on there too, right?
He might be. Somebody joined him for the chorus.
Yeah, who else sounds like Willie Nelson?
Okay, I'll take your word for it.
Uh-huh.
Well, I have a winner.
Right.
Do you want to... I mean...
No, I... Toby Keith. I mean, I listen to that.
Oh, the Toby long. Keith is better?
Yeah.
I completely disagree
oh, really?
With you. I completely say here's why the Keith Urban is better. It's because it's not over the top. It's not the country stuff seems more, you know. I mean,
okay. the Toby Keith sounds like a country song.
It sounds like a country song.
The Keith Urban sounds like
right.
a pop song
right.
with a twang.
I would rather listen to the Keith Urban song than
right.
this.
Right.
But I don't really like either of them. But if some
yeah, I'm not saying like I'm
Keith Urban song is more of I don't know. Keith Urban song is a ballad, and this is a rock song, or this yeah. is a song to raise your fist to,
sure.
and I don't know. I mean, to me, this Toby Keith, this is what people hate about country music. Everything that people hate about country is kind of in this.
Well, it's all the cliches, right?
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know what though? I'm giving that one a pass based on Willie Nelson. Who it's hard to argue with Willie. You know what I mean? Like,
all right.
Even if you don't like country music, I think you got to like Willie Nelson.
Do you want to hear Miley? I mean, is that?
Yeah, play a little bangers.
Is that that's the one I should be listening for?
I don't even know what her hits
let
are.
Let me tell you what the top songs here on Google Play are. Adore You, Wrecking Ball, We Can't Stop.
Okay, Wrecking Ball. Go ahead.
But that's a ballad, right?
Okay, yeah. Which just play one of them. I don't care.
Well, let me get you the bangers album. How's that?
All right, good.
Well, We Can't Stop, I think, is her big hit from that. It's the second song on. Let's hear this. Come on. Google Play's been weird today. It hasn't been playing
mm-hmm.
every time I click on these, which is annoying because I've got stuff queued up for the show. But no, it doesn't want to play that. Here's something called SMS Bangers. But this has EDM in it. You hear that right away.
All the way in the back with a tree on my lap. All the boys like to ask me, what you doing with that? You say you love me. I ain't fooling with that. They ask
right.
me how I keep.
Can I listen to Toby Keith again?
Yeah. I mean, this is aggressively bad. One day he wants me not. I don't
do chances. It's time to say what. No, this is pretty lousy. And I got a world tour that they need me.
Is this just like this? Sounds like the music they listen to in Idiocracy.
Well, it's. I mean, it's rap that is like there is a sort of this genre of rap that really just sounds like cheerleading,
right?
And that's kind of what this is too. I don't know if that's a Nicki Minaj. Yeah, that's pretty lousy.
That's brutal, man. All right,
that is not good.
Oh.
Do you want to hear Wrecking Ball or do you want to hear Adore You? I don't know what.
Let's hear Adore You.
I don't know what Adore You is. Let's hear Adore You. Let's go to that. Oh. I think she's singing. We're off to a good start.
This sounds more like Lana Del Rey or something.
Okay, well, but you know what? I think she's. Miley's kind of all over the place stylistically, though, because she's.
Yeah, I think she does a bunch of different stuff. None of it good.
There's a little auto-tune on there.
Oh, did you hear the Britney auto-tune?
I did not, but I don't want to hear the Britney auto-tune.
Oh,
I don't want to hear the Britney. I don't want to hear the Britney anything. Get me out of there. Britney's become a weird Frankenstein-like performer.
It's horrible.
She kind of like stands on stage and people dance around her. It seems like the clips that I've seen of like her Vegas show. Yeah, she sort of like lifts one foot at a time and kind of turns her head in different directions, but that's kind of the extent of her dancing.
And what is she, 33?
I don't know. Yeah, she's way over the hill. No, I don't know. No, she's in her 30s, something. I don't know what she is. Yeah.
32. Okay, this is a lot more tolerable.
Well, you know, here's something that I'm... Okay, do you want to hear something I'm legitimately listening to and compare it to this?
God, we're losing the fourth play.
I know, the fourth... I know.
They were all cranking the Toby Keith, and then we start playing some minor.
Well, I'm listening... I actually like this record, which...
Yeah.
This is a new Lily Allen. Have you heard this?
Well, I like Lily Allen.
Yeah, but people say she's gone the wrong way. So you don't even like this album. You haven't even heard it.
I haven't heard it.
Yeah. Because she raps in this, you know, she's always kind of... Been here before. But this is her, you know, the lead song from her. Not gonna lie, though, I'm kind of scared. Well, like, this song she raps about all the other artists, you know. Don't let my kids watch me when I get in the rain. But, you know, know, Lily does stuff that's, you know.
I still kind of like this.
You like this? This is better than Miley.
I hate that synth drum roll.
Yeah. Can't just come back, jump on the mic and do the same thing. There goes the bell. I do like this record, though. So, I mean, as much as she's gone pop, I sort of...
You know what? I like Lily Allen. Lily Allen's just, like, smarter version
right,
of all
yeah,
this
I
shit. Like,
mean,
her stuff always has an edge. Her lyrics have a punch to them. They're usually
No, her
about...
lyrics are pretty good. I give her that. I mean, this is her... God, it's skipping tracks so bad on this.
She'll make really happy-sounding songs that the lyrics are like... You fucking lying cheat, you abuse me.
Yeah. You know, this is like her After the Club song. You know, it's a pretty good record, actually, even though it does sound a little like the Miley Cyrus. So I just stopped the music. I'm still
swaying like I was on a cruise ship. It's leaning a little towards that.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah. Come on, everybody, back to my house. Take my hand now, you're coming over. It doesn't matter, you can sleep on my sofa. Bring some. Anyway, that's I'm trying to play
I still think that's better than
It's better
know,
than Miley.
It's got the production touches in it.
That's the
like,
thing, yeah. Her production, they're saying, has sort of leaned towards the yeah, I can't
Britney's 32. Wow.
All right. Well, let's. All right. So anyway, so Miley's on TV and it's awful. That's
well, it just was fascinating. It was
well,
like,
you're fascinated by why she's the most popular thing.
Now, granted, I chose to review movies, which means I'm exposed to a lot of garbage.
Sure.
That I wouldn't normally right. be. If I had some other job, I would never hear this stuff or know about it.
Well,
and
but you,
if I drove a truck or something, I would
No, but you were exposed to it because you sat at home and turned on your television at 8 o'clock. That's why you were exposed to it. And
the
that's,
Bangers
but,
Tour. Right,
but if you look at the most popular of whatever, it's usually not good. I mean, there are exceptions. You know, the Beatles, you know, had all these top 10 hits and those were good records. But, you know, there are times when, you know, the best thing in the world becomes the most popular thing, but it's not often.
Oh, I have the Consumer Reports fast food review, but I left it in the car.
Yeah, they do that every year, and
Should
we've
I
done it on the
that?
Show before. You know what? I think I'm all right.
I will just say, in terms of the most popular, if you look at that list.
Well, is it top of, are you talking about in terms of sales or in terms of what people actually think is the best?
Yeah, they reviewed them.
No, the best taste. I'll do it right now. Don't pull up shit. I'll do it right now. In-N-Out Burger is number one, followed by Five Guys, followed by Chick-fil-A. Followed by...
Well, they broke them into categories.
Yeah, I know.
So
they do it in categories.
Chick-fil-A was in the chicken category.
Chick-fil-A is considered the best. You know, the best burger is probably... well, it's probably In-N-Out, but they're not considered... They're considered what? Mm. Like boutique fast food or something?
Yeah, I don't know. They didn't really... they did have a category for fast casual that
yeah,
was separate.
So.
But then they also had...
And that would be like Qdoba or something and
uh-huh.
Potbelly or...
California cult favorite In-N-Out
is the...
was second.
In-N-Out saved 3 children from drowning last week, Corey. Did you know that?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. A place I've never heard of called Habit Burger.
Well, there you need to go.
Which
there.
Is another California
yeah.
chain. I think they were 1 and 2 with In-N-Out.
Okay.
I've had In-N-Out and I stand by it. It's a good burger.
I'm sure it's terrific, but...
But I'll tell you what. The first time I had In-N-Out was probably 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And it was like revelatory. It was amazing.
Sure.
Because you'd never had a fast food burger
right.
like that. Now there's Five Guys.
Right.
Smash
and
Burger.
And honestly, like anything is, you don't get is probably going to taste good to you.
I've had In-N-Out 3-4 times in my life.
Yeah.
And I always thought it was good.
Sure.
But now I can get. Have you been to Smash Burger?
I have not.
Smash Burger is
the
excellent.
Same thing. It's good.
It's a really good burger.
Yeah.
Like, the quality overall has risen.
Sure. Yeah.
You know,
well, when Wendy's redid their burgers, they basically said, we're going to make Five Guys burgers. Fuck yeah. you. Here they are. And you know what? And it's a good burger.
It's a knockoff of a...
It's a knockoff of a Five Guys burger. And they yeah. knocked off the fries, too. And that's okay. I mean, I don't, you know. But, you know, I you know what? I can enjoy... But I think it's
Culver's yeah. was ranked fairly high on
Culver's
this list.
Is considered great, and I don't
Five
think
Five Guys, Smashburger, Fuddruckers, Steak and Shake, Hardee's.
Yeah,
And then, of course, at the bottom,
it's probably McDonald's.
McDonald's and Burger King.
McDonald's and Burger King. But you know what?
McDonald's was at the bottom.
The problem with McDonald's and Burger King is there's so many locations that the quality is just harder to control. And, you know, I don't think...
I don't know. Isn't the whole point of a Burger King you're supposed to be able to have the same Burger King everywhere you go?
Yeah, but I don't think... I think that's the theory, but I don't know if that's...
Which I think is why they're not as good.
But I also think that, you know, when you go to, like, Hardee's, like, those burgers are about $6. Like, the burger is $6.
There's these $6.
The combo is $9, probably, versus $5.50 at McDonald's. Right. So there is a cost differential as well. And, you know, McDonald's says this is the burger that we're going to give you for $2.50 or whatever. Right. What was the McDonald's burger, about $3 or $4 at the most?
They're edging up in their prices.
But they're not, you know, they're still affordable. I mean, you can get the $1.50 double cheeseburger.
Yeah.
And that's a great deal. And, you know.
I have not been into a McDonald's other than breakfast in so long.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
I eat McDonald's and I enjoy it. I don't always, it's not my favorite thing. And sometimes it does leave me feeling ill afterwards. But you know, I try not to eat like a large fry because that doesn't sit well with me.
Like a McDonald's breakfast, I'll have like a McGriddle or a biscuit, and it's delightful. And I know it's wrong. I know I shouldn't be doing it, but that is the only McDonald's I'll have, really.
But I mean, if In-N-Out was on every corner,
it would be. Well, I don't go to Five Guys.
Yeah, that's the thing. I
went to Five Guys when they opened, and then everybody liked.
People know from this show my history with Five Guys.
Yeah, you've sworn it off.
I've had it 3 times, and I've had diarrhea 3 times, and I think it was from the fries. I mean, I think it was from the fries, to be honest with you.
I don't know.
It could be from the beef, but the fries, if you order like their large fry, it's gigantic. It's like three potatoes worth of fries.
It's a lot of food.
Yeah, and it's
burger,
very greasy.
The whole thing, it's a lot.
And so I just kind of, I'm done with Five Guys.
Yeah.
You know, even though I enjoy it. It's
probably for the best for you.
Yeah, it's fine. I'm fine.
Your colon.
Right.
Restrooms.
But you would think, but see,
America.
I always tell you that, you know, I don't like eating, you know, Thai food or something or Chinese that is, What do you want me to adjust?
No, it just is a little loud.
You're loud.
Yeah,
I'm
loud. I'm a little loud.
The headphones in my monitor.
Yeah.
Oh, look at that. But, you know, I just, you know, as much as you make fun of me for not eating, like, spicy foods, you'd think that Five Guys would be right up my alley.
Sure.
But I can't even eat that. Like,
well,
I have a very,
Thai food is hot.
Yeah, right.
Like, we had Thai food last week.
Yeah.
And the girl's like, and you know, they look at the white people and they're like, medium? What do you want?
Yeah, right.
And I said,
and some people can go for
that. And I said,
yeah.
Spicy.
Yeah.
And it was pretty spicy. Mm-hmm. You would have died.
But I can't eat barbecue.
Well, that's sad.
Some barbecue isn't hot. I get that some barbecue isn't hot at all. But there's something about barbecue that just, I don't like the taste of it.
Well.
And sometimes it's hot. So I don't know. But what I'm saying is, like, even though, you know, something like Five Guys upsets my stomach. A lot of things do, so I'm very, you know, you know. So I don't experiment too much. Even Culver's is too greasy.
Culver's is a lot for me.
Yeah, Culver's is too greasy.
I'm kind of at the point where I don't.
Those burgers are not big. That's a weird thing too when you talk about like what gourmet burger people like, because there's giant burgers people like a Five Guys, which is like a quarter pound patty. You get the double. They double it up unless you ask for it half size. But then you get like a Culver's burger, and it's a little thin little thing.
Well, yeah,
and then like that's delicious. So
I eat fewer burgers per year.
That's fine.
Than I ever have in my life.
No one, you know what? Nobody.
And I'm just saying. I mean, I'm just, you know, I'm just eating less of them because I'm getting old. But
what were the surprises on the food survey?
It's just that the bottom ones are always the most popular.
Well, there you go.
The biggest chains are always rated.
Miley is at the bottom of quality and at popularity.
Like, the worst pizza was, here's the bottom of the list.
Okay.
The top of the list are like regional ones you've never heard of.
I would think that Little Caesars pizza has to be really, really bad. And I'm sure Pizza Hut is also rated really, really bad.
Sure.
How did I do?
Who came in fifth?
Something I've heard of?
Your boyfriend, Papa John.
Yeah, because they're but they're considered better. I mean, they trump themselves up that way.
God, they're not better.
I think Domino's probably got a good rating, probably in that. I mean, considering it might have been at the top or the bottom. I mean, it's still probably at the bottom, but it's probably above.
Here's the bottom five.
Give me the bottom five.
Little Caesars.
They're the lowest of the low?
No.
They're fifth from the bottom. Okay.
Domino's.
Is below? Okay, go ahead.
Pizza Hut.
Okay. God, what could be below? Wait a minute. You've given me. Wait a minute. Hold on a second.
There's
Little
two
Caesars.
Below Little Caesars and
okay,
Domino's.
CC's has to be below that.
Yes.
That, if, now, I don't believe you've ever been to CC's,
no,
have
I
you? Well, I got to take you there. It's amazing.
No, why?
It's amazing how bad
I don't
that
want
food
bad
is.
Pizza.
Yeah, but it's amazing. It's an amazing buffet of awful pizza. Okay, and there's something else on there.
What's the very bottom?
And it's something I've heard of?
Yeah.
I'm thinking what other national chains I've heard of. Let me think.
Mm-hmm.
It's California Pizza Kitchen, but that wouldn't be low.
That wouldn't be that low.
Wendy's, McDonald's. I mean, Hungry Howie's is regional. Papa Romano's is regional. Jets is
on the edge.
Jets is regional.
Right.
So I mean, these are local Detroit places I'm talking about. There's a national chain that I'm not, and it's in Detroit. This national chain,
yes.
Buddy's is regional.
It's omnipresent across the nation.
Omnipresent. It's not Little Caesars, Domino's, Pizza Hut, Papa John's. What other?
It's often found in other locations. Like, it's not, they're not, they don't have a lot of freestanding stores. Yes.
Hey!
The worst of the worst.
Well, okay, if I have to rank, well, first of all, Sbarro might be goddamn, like, they might make those Sbarro pies, and those things are fucking delicious. But mm-hmm. they make those once a week. You know, those fucking pies sit around. That's why that stuff's garbage.
I mean, the pizza they make?
The Sbarro, yeah. That pie, well, I mean, and that's the way a lot of, like, New York pizzerias work, is, you know, you get a slice, they take the slice, they heat the slice up. It's not like it's fresh out of the oven.
Yeah.
But, you know, those places, like, charge you, like, $1 a slice. It's, like, really, you know, and it's very quick.
The pizza, by the way, the grade of pizza varies wildly in New
York. Yeah, but I'm saying,
which New York, by the way, considered the pizza capital of the
absolutely.
World.
Absolutely.
But if you go to, like, Grimaldi's in Brooklyn.
Sure. Yeah.
Or Original Ray, well, there's, like, five
yeah,
different
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, when I lived in New York City, I ate pizza every day. Now, yeah. I didn't always.
Well, sure.
I did. Because it was cheap. It was a dollar. Literally, I could go to I could go to the pizzeria across from the Comedy Cellar, mm-hmm. which was a block from my dorm room. Mm-hmm. And I could go there, and the guy charged me like $1 a slice and $1 for a Coke. So I would go in and get two slices and a Coke for like $3.
Yeah.
And you can't eat a cheaper meal than that in New York. And it was fine, but it was sort of that Sbarro thing where the guy would heat up the slices and give them to you. And it was delicious, but it wasn't, you know. I wouldn't win any awards.
A bodega, bodega pizza?
It was a pizzeria pizza. It wasn't bodega pizza. Mm-hmm. And then there was, you know, there was a couple other places you could go. I forget what the one was called that was like
Two Boots? Did you go to
Two Boots? Yeah, that was a place you could go and get fancy pizza. Mm-hmm. They had a million different styles. And delicious, a little more expensive. There wasn't really a Two Boots down the, you know, the one that was closest to my house. There were two that were close to my house. I would go to those.
It's in the Village.
They were not Ray's or anything famous. Yeah, they were in the Village. One was on Washington Place and off Washington Square, and the other one was on 3rd and McDougal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I ate, and it was fine. But it wouldn't win any awards. Yeah, then you go to your Grimaldi's and that, and then you have to buy a whole pie at some of those places. So I wouldn't eat those. So Sbarro might be a good pie if they made – you know what I'm saying? If they made the whole thing, and I don't know how Sbarro works, but when I have had Sbarro, like at the Ohio Turnpike rest area – it's fucking garbage because it's like warmed over and
my
shit.
My pizza was made in 1987.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And Little Caesars is really pretty lousy.
It's awful.
It's pretty bad. I've been getting pizza lately, but I've been getting Papa Romano's here in the Detroit area. And I think that's kind of delicious. That's pretty tasty pizza.
I think the thing with pizza is the national chains are just never going to compete with all of the – wherever you are, there's a local pizzeria – that does it better.
Well, what about Como's here in Ferndale? Has a great
Como's
New York style
is
pie.
A good pizza. It's
delicious New York style pie.
I don't know if it's a New York style.
It's
own
a thin
kind
crust.
Of...
It's a, mm-hmm. it's not. It, they don't make the giant pies with the 12-inch slices like New York does. But it's a definitely.
Have you been to Supino's?
It's a New York style pizza. I have not been to Supino's.
Supino's is outstanding.
Okay,
that's a
but you know
New York style pie.
The old joke about pizza. No. You know, it's like pizza's like a blowjob even when it's bad.
It's good.
It's still okay. So that's kind of how I feel.
Green Lantern.
Never had it.
That's good pizza. Yeah. That's good.
I went in their restaurant, and it's one of those places where, you know, Here's my thing. I don't stand in line for food. Go fuck yourself. That's my rule. So you can have the greatest brunch place.
They have an outlet.
I'm not going there. Yeah, by John Tenney's house.
By John's house.
Yeah, and I've never had that either.
That's where I order from.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay, pizza.
Your best chicken.
You're ruining the Apes cast with your pizza. But by the way, I'm sorry.
Your best chicken, Chick-fil-A.
Of course.
Well, it's going to be an Apes blowout.
At the end of the show.
On the second half.
Okay.
Chick-fil-A.
Delicious chicken. Are there other national chickens I would know on here?
Boston Market.
Okay.
El Pollo Loco, which is
a California thing. Yeah.
And then, you know, I had the whole list in the car and I forgot to bring it in.
Okay, but you're reading some summary.
Yeah. And then, of course, KFC the lowest.
KFC's the lowest. And
now,
then,
I don't know where Popeyes and churches
are. Yeah, I was
going to
say Popeyes and churches are probably just above that, yeah. As you would expect with, like, national, you know, chicken places. Because in Detroit, we have our, if you want the best chicken in Detroit from a chain, you would go to Chicken Shack. Because that's the local chain. The local chain that is better than KFC.
I like Chicken Shack.
Chicken Shack's delicious.
Yeah.
We have a place in Detroit, if you want sit down. Well, the places that do the Broasted, which is not a chain, but I guess the equipment you have to buy from some company somewhere in Milwaukee.
Oh, really?
If you get Broasted, like we go to a place called Nicola's in Southfield, myself and I'll take MC Sampler over there sometimes. That's the best chicken I've ever had.
What about Zanku Chicken in L.A.? Did you talk about that?
Never been there.
Okay.
But, you know, sometimes I'll take MC Sampler.
Yaya's
and you
chicken.
Get that chicken, yeah, and that's I haven't had Yaya's. That's Broasted Chicken. That's what is that called? Rotisserie chicken,
like a
right?
Rotisserie. Yeah. Anyway, so I, you know, now I need the whole list so I can see where Popeyes and churches
fall
on the list.
We'll be okay.
But, you know.
Our listeners will make it through that, so.
Anyway, it just seems like the bottom of the barrel of everything.
It's always
the biggest thing,
yeah.
The worst burrito, Taco Bell.
But you could also say that the frequency and the availability of these things makes them less desirable. That it's simply a psychological difference between a McDonald's burger and a Culver's burger. Because McDonald's is on every corner and Culver's is not.
Mm-hmm.
And so, when Culver's is the closest thing to your house, you know, you're going to go, well, there's nothing special about that. But, oh, I'm in L.A., you know, every 5 years, and I get In-N-Out Burger, and it's this magical treat.
Have you ever had Crystal Burger?
No, but it's basically White Castle. It's Atlanta's version of, it's the South's White Castle.
I will say in defense of In-N-Out,
yeah,
that people in Los Angeles who live there
sure
treat it like it's a magical fairyland.
I guess they do. I
Ice
don't know.
Cube rolls up in the line. You know what I mean? Like Tom Cruise will send a guy on a movie set and go, here, go bring
but,
back.
But
you know what I mean?
Celebrities like, follow fashion too, though. That's the other thing that you can't.
But it's like a persistent, like,
I get that.
20
I,
years
I
of people
that.
Talking
no,
about In-N-Out.
That.
It's crazy.
It's
a cult item at this point.
It's cult. You never had Chick-fil-A, which
I've never had Chick-fil-A.
We should remedy that somewhere. I don't know where we're going to do that.
I don't know.
All right.
There you go. Hardee's, Wendy's.
Because I went on
Wendy's
this,
is like middle.
Wendy's is like.
I think Wendy's is a better quality fast food burger.
Whenever you and I like, we'll do the show, and I'll go, let's go get some fast food. You're all about Wendy's.
I'm not all about it, but it's the better option.
That's your go. Considering where I live and what's around, it's the go-to option.
Yeah, yeah.
I took you to the hood to get KFC a couple weeks ago.
Well, that is horrible.
That was the closest KFC I've had in a long time. The first closest KFC to my house is in the hood.
And by the hood, you mean like a mile away.
I live a mile from the hood. I don't live in the hood. Believe me, let me tell you about what I did.
Cusp.
I've been going on bike rides a lot, right? So in the last 2 weeks, I rode my bike. If you don't know Detroit, I'm going to do my best to explain it, but Corey will get this right away. But I rode my bike from Ferndale through Hazel Park the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And had a delightful time.
Sure.
Nice time. So I rode basically from my house, I rode basically due east and a little bit north. Okay. Then the other day I said, let's go the other way. I went due west from my house, rode through Ferndale, Michigan, my hometown, into Oak Park, Michigan.
Yeah.
Holy fucking shit. Holy goddamn motherfucking shit. It changes from
Royal Oak.
No, it's a street called Republic.
Yeah, okay.
It changes from Ferndale to Oak Park like that. You know it right away. There's no question about that you've just left one city and entered another. It's really bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
The houses go from, like, you know, nice, you know, 50s, 60s, you know, kind of tract housing to, like, tar paper shacks. It's amazing. And and I know you lived in Oak Park, and you lived in a better part than I rode through, I will tell
Oak
you.
Oak Park is a couple miles across, yeah, and there's better parts of it.
This border part between... Basically, I was... Where was I? I was south of where you used to live. Because I was on Scotia, but I was on Scotia south of 9 Mile.
I lived on the north of 9 Mile side.
And my God, was it garbage, garbage, garbage over there. And I was shocked. I was like, fuck, I'm in the hood. I was like, I gotta get on my bike and get the fuck out of here.
Not that bad, but
it's amazingly different. It's amazing how different it is, though. To go
the southern end of Oak Park is very different than
you know. I guess I rode probably in one direction. I probably rode about 3 miles, maybe.
Well,
that
when I was a kid, and, 20 years ago, when I grew up behind the woods, which is next to Oak Park.
Yeah,
20 years ago, there were a lot more Jews in Oak Park.
Sure, yeah,
and there were like Jewish bakers. There's still there still is a section of Oak Park that there are a lot of Hasidim there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that's where, like, the bagel places are and the donuts.
Right, yeah.
Stuff.
And then they have the...
And that's still there.
They have the temples over there.
The
you see them.
Deli.
Yeah, yeah.
The kosher stuff, that corner, the kosher corner, is pretty much the same as it ever was.
Yeah.
But there are parts of it that are...
That neighborhoods, though, man, I was surprised how quickly it changed. And it's like, there must have been a point when, you know, they stopped, where whatever that was the cutoff, and they must have went... No, they must have went,
the
like...
The other place where you can see this in the metro area, where it's really striking... There's probably a couple transition places, like Centerline and Warren falls apart at a certain point.
Sure, yeah.
But, like, Grosse Pointe and Detroit border.
Yeah, yeah, that too.
That is night and day.
But that way, that thing you sort of see. But, you know, it's funny when, if you're just driving down 9 Mile from Ferndale into Oak Park, it doesn't look any different. But when you ride through the neighborhood streets, because that's what I was doing, that's when you really see the lawns going from cut to not being cut. The houses going from, like, you know... 2,000 square feet to 700 square feet.
Did you hear what Grosse Pointe did?
Yeah, I heard this. Explain to people because than I do.
Grosse Pointe is the eastern edge suburb of Detroit.
Yeah.
And so it's technically kind of, you know, it's right between Detroit and Lake Huron is Grosse Pointe. And Grosse Pointe Woods and Park and Farms.
Yeah.
It's the east side of Detroit. And right around, there's a strong, striking divide.
Yes.
Because that part of Detroit is really falling apart.
Yeah.
The eastern rim of Detroit. Well, Kercheval is the main thoroughfare of Grosse Pointe, and it goes through all the way through the city.
Yeah.
At where Kercheval and like Alter, or like
is
where,
it, is it
where
Alter?
They meet.
Yeah, okay.
Whatever those roads are.
Yeah, my buddy used to live right over there on the Detroit side.
On the Grosse Pointe Park side of it, they built a new beer garden. Like a roundabout and like a whole, it's like a little downtown part of Grosse Pointe. And then they put up a farmer's market, which literally blocks the street.
Yeah. And like the ass end, like the back end of the farmer's market is essentially a wall between Detroit
and Grosse Pointe.
So like the market, like, is, you'd have to go around this building to access the market. But from Detroit,
much cuts off.
You see just the
Detroit.
Back of it. Yeah, it's really weird.
And they're saying, well, the market will go down in the winter and you can cross. But it's still like they really built this buffer zone.
They kind of just said,
to try
hey,
and keep
let's
Detroit
do this.
Separate.
Yeah, well,
and it's really striking. I've taken people from out of town on that trip down Jefferson. And
yeah,
you
right.
See,
yeah,
like,
you go through Jefferson.
You go immediately
from
like a house that cost $80,000 to a house that's held up by two posts. And it's like... There's 15 dogs living under it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's a really rampant, like a massive.
Yeah, it's weird. It's odd why that happens, and I'm sort of like, around here, why would that happen? And the only thing I can think is that, you know, at some point the development caught, you know, that land was subdivided later, and because it was farther away from the main thoroughfare, like Woodward, it was less expensive to, you know, the land was less expensive to acquire, so they bought, you know, less expensive homes on there, and it sort of continued throughout time, you know, until
is,
now.
But,
and
you know,
it's
just,
wow.
For all our progress, for all our growth, for all our evolving as a species and human beings, there's still tribalism.
There is.
And this will lead right into Planet of the Apes.
All right, let's
but
go
But what I'm
it.
Saying is, in Chicago, if you'll see this. It's really striking there. Like, you'll go on the north side of Chicago, there's like Rogers Park. And that's like all Indian and Pakistani and all these Indian groceries and restaurants. And you hit like, I don't know which street, but like you hit it and suddenly you're in like the Eastern Europe, the Russian.
Sure. Yeah. You hit
the, and it's like you cross the street and it's you go from,
yeah,
you know, Bengali spice.
Well,
to
New York's like, you know, you go into Chinatown in New York, and
but
like,
those lines,
fuck, I'm right here. Yeah,
the lines are. You can look at each other across the street, but the lines seem to be very real and exist. Anyway, all right. Speaking of dividing lines,
yes,
just a brief two words.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Ready for apes.
Yeah, let's do it. Oh, you're not ready? No. You're not ready.
You're so ready to talk about apes. You got a lot of thoughts.
I thought that we would only... Well, Tenny and I saw the new movie last night.
Well, Tenny blew
it. He was supposed to come, and we were going to have this Planet of the Apes blowout, and now we're talking about fast food burgers. It would never happen with Tenny here. What are you going to go get into? What you're getting into?
I was going to say, speaking of people
ahead.
That fight and claw and scratch at each other and jump around like unsophisticated savages.
Yeah.
The View.
Oh.
Fired Jenny McCarthy and Sherry.
Good. Why don't they just poll the audience and go, who should we have and who should we not have?
Why don't they ask the audience, why are you watching this?
Well, The View, you know what? The thing about that View cast is, you know what's weird about it is they try to be everything to everybody. And that's why they can't get people to work on there, because they go, well, we've got to be ethnically diverse. We have to be age diverse. We have to be, you know, not everybody can be a comedian. We'll have comedians on, but we need hard news people. We need comedians.
Well,
we need
why...
moms. We need single women. And it can't be everything to everybody. And so it's a constant clusterfuck. It's
you have just clearly delineated. You've clearly underlined everything that's wrong with television.
Well, yeah.
And television producers.
Well, it's...
Because they want people that generate controversy.
Yeah.
They want people that people will talk about. And then they put them on, and they realize, oh, crap.
I actually disagree with that in a sense. I don't know that they want people on there to fight with each other, even though it's probably good for me. I think they would ideally go, like, let's get all these people from different backgrounds to come on and have civil, intelligent discussions about things. Yeah. You know, what they do is they go out, they hire morons and go, sit down and have an intelligent, rational discussion. And then they realize that they can't do that. And it really turns the audience off. And I don't know. I think if they just tried to drop that and just said, let's get five women who are really good on television, who, you know how to talk to an audience and have a point of view, we can have a show. But they sort of do this weird stunt casting.
The other problem with television, one, they generate fake controversy and crave it, and then when they get it, they're unhappy with it.
Well, they run from it because...
Two, and this is not just television. Television is the tip of the spear. Television is the front line in a war that is consuming our society on every level. And it is the big lie at the heart of... just like the Forbidden Zone is a big lie told to the apes people.
Yes.
The big lie is that pretty people have opinions.
Well, there's that too, yes.
Most people, and particularly the kind of people they put on television,
yes,
are too attractive to have developed a personality.
Well,
there is a level at which...
some of that,
okay,
sure.
Anything above a six, and a woman generally sevens and higher's, don't need a personality.
Sure.
Don't want a personality, don't need to know about anything. Those are the people they want to put on television.
Because
we all go, ooh, pretty, look at her. Because there's a sickness in the human fucking spirit in which we all think attractiveness equals leadership, attractiveness equals intelligence.
Again, they're trying to be...
Occasionally it does. Sometimes there's a fucker who's just handsome and smart.
You know, they want pretty women to appeal to men, and then they also think that, you know, pretty women don't just appeal to men. Pretty women appeal to women because women go like, that's somebody I want to be.
Pretty woman appealed to me. It spoke to my heart with Richard Gere.
Well, the point is that, you know, the premise of The View is that it's, you know, this week with David Brinkley for moms. And it's a dumb fucking premise for a show. And it doesn't work in reality. Mm. It works in theory. It's something they want. And it survived.
It's not this week. It's this twat with crackpot opinions.
Yeah, it's like something that they wish would work. And what they find is that, you know, it's abrasive to the audience. And when it's working in a rating sense, the show gets hard to produce because, you know, everyone starts getting demanding and, you know, everyone's fighting for screen
time.
Well,
they all get raises.
And they all get, people get different raises. And so it doesn't work. It's a real, like, why not just make a show where a bunch of people sit around and have a nice discussion? And, you know, maybe that's not attractive enough to be a television show.
That's called PBS News Hour.
Okay, there you go.
Right?
All right.
the what used to be called the McNeil Lair Report. That's called that's what they don't do anymore.
Well, that
and that is a there is a major shift. Okay.
But the view could also take all that out and go, we're not going to discuss politics. They could be Kelly and Michael by just dropping all of the political, the hard news,
right.
Because no one's learning any hard news discussion from Whoopi Goldberg and Sherry Shepherd or whatever bims they have on there at the moment.
You know what, though? I feel like all of TV is no longer news, it's analysis.
And it's all now, of course it is.
All of it's analysis.
Of course it
is. All of it's what
water cooler talk.
But Sherry Shepherd shouldn't have an opinion about anything.
She would be better off without it.
Right.
I mean, the problem I have a problem with, Jon Stewart and stuff. And it's like, you know, it's not that funny when you're running your mouth every minute. Dennis Miller's kind of got the same problem. You know, you're running your mouth every minute about politics, and it's,
I like those shows, but there's times when I don't, need it.
I mean, it's...
Because I know they're going to do every night, they're going to do the same. John Oliver show's good because it's once a week.
I've seen the John Oliver show. It's not bad. Yeah,
it's once a week.
It's kind of the same deal, but exactly. Yeah. But the problem with Jon Stewart is, hey, something's happening in the news. Let's go get Jon Stewart and get his take on it. That would be great. It's fucking every night.
Right.
He's got to do a show every night, and it's like, it's not, If it was like, The Tonight Show, something's going on in the news. Let's book Jon Stewart, and he'll tell us about it. That would be, Jon Stewart would be appealing to me, I think, in that way. But him being on every night,
right,
and sort of having this bully pulpit and having, get out of here. I don't care.
Well,
get lost.
One, you're not that politically aligned with Jon Stewart. So I like Stewart and Colbert a lot more than you, but I do agree that if it's on five nights a week, I'm not watching all five.
But if I was politically aligned with Jon Stewart, I don't think I'd be more inclined to watch it. I think there are certain audience members that, that Jon Stewart is their news source.
Yeah,
unfortunately,
Jon
Stewart, they're out there, and maybe they're not you.
That's a canard that Fox News.
But that's the thing. If I watched Fox News for my news, I can't do that.
You're not getting news.
But
there,
I'm saying I can't do that.
Well, that's
illegal. You won't let
no,
me.
No,
do,
well,
I'm not saying me, but as a person, I don't fuck all those guys.
The
I don't
problem
care about
with
any
all
of them.
These cable news networks. You're not getting a lot of hard. I'll tell you what. MSNBC.
Yeah.
I like two shows on there at this point.
Okay.
And that'll be on in my kind of default news a lot of the time, or in the background, or because CNN's pretty. Unless something happens, CNN's really drivelly.
Yeah, CNN's.
If something actually happens, then CNN does a better job.
Yeah.
When you want to get the news about what somebody got invaded or something.
Yeah.
Al Sharpton, give me a fucking break.
So who do you like on
there? I like Rachel Maddow.
Okay.
And I like Chris Hayes to a certain extent.
Okay.
And Larry O'Donnell's very full of himself.
All right.
But all those shows, it's the same with the Fox thing. It's like,
well,
those
shows my point is okay, Jon Stewart. Okay, you can say, well, you watch
now,
Fox.
Hold on. Toby Keith or Sean Hannity? Which one would you rather?
But there's the difference between, the reason I get annoyed by people who turn to Jon Stewart for the news source is that Jon Stewart is per billing a comedian, and Fox News aren't comedians.
I'm saying
they might be morons, but if they're all morons, at least the people that
I don't really know anybody who's getting their news from Jon Stewart. If they are, that's a popular
refrain. Well, the reason I say that is that here's people who aren't but there's people who aren't watching any news channel whatsoever.
Right.
So the only news that they're getting is they'll read something on Twitter or they'll read headlines. They're not really following news.
I'll tell you what,
Jon Stewart does.
John Oliver's,
but he does
a
newscast. Jon Stewart does.
What Jon Oliver's done a good job of is getting to stories that aren't even getting covered on The Daily Show.
Yeah, I like Jon Oliver a little bit.
Because The Daily Show and Colbert every day are like, John Boehner said this, Joe Biden said this. It's very much the Washington loop of what happened. Jon Oliver's doing more interesting kind of stories on the edges of stuff. He did a thing about why FIFA is awful.
Sure. I like him. I don't know.
Well, maybe it's not your format.
It's not. Honestly, news parody or news discussion, whether it be comedic or otherwise, isn't generally entertaining to me.
I don't know why.
Well, because news is news. And entertainment is entertainment, and they don't need to cross in my, you know, newsertainment does not really appeal to me. It just doesn't. I mean, it's you know, I like, you know.
I'll tell you what.
I'm going to give you good television shows to watch today and good movies to watch today.
All right, good.
They have nothing to do with the news.
You don't watch food TV either.
That's true.
That, let me tell you something right now.
I don't need those two streams to cross either.
Like, okay, we watch the next Food Network star.
Yeah.
Not because we think it's a good show.
Of course not.
We think it's a terrible show.
Nobody thinks
that's our, like, that is to me, like, the Plan 9 of outer space of, like, we watch a show specifically to watch people suck.
Okay.
And be bad at it because it's a guilt pleasure watch. It's kind of this is why other people watch The Bachelor and The Bachelorette. I hate those shows, The Bachelorette. Right. I can't watch a minute of that.
Sure.
But I know a lot of people tune in and watch how awful.
Well,
on the next Food Network star, the people who are really awful are the producers and the execs of Food Network. And we see them doing this process we're talking about, the dumbing down and the whoring up at the simultaneous.
What makes some bad, like, who's bad on, like, if you turn on next Food Network star, how do you know that somebody's, because here's the thing, if you put on a television camera, put it over somebody, and they were cooking food, and I was watching this on my television, I wouldn't know if they were cooking good or cooking poorly.
Okay.
And I know that there's probably some host that's yelling at them, and that's why you're determining if they're good or not, but
okay,
aside from that, I wouldn't know.
There's kind of a deal where we can just tell what the producers want.
Okay.
They desperately want a young Latina woman who can articulate the message so they can attract Hispanics. Right. They've been looking for one for like 5 years on that show, and they never find one.
Okay.
There's never good enough. You can tell who's good on camera and who isn't. The network
execs.
Okay,
well, that's true. There are
the
people.
The network execs are inevitably drawn to the people that are good on camera.
Sure.
Those are not the people who are the good cooks.
And are they judges or something on the show? Or are they?
They're not on every episode anymore. They got rid of. Anyway. What I'm saying is, I can't explain the whole thing to you because you don't care. But
I don't care. I'm listening.
There's one lady, though. Okay, so they've got.
I'm getting that it's not all about the cooking. It's about who's good on camera.
Who's good on TV. So I kind of like the process of, like, what they're looking for.
Okay.
How do you do a segment?
Right.
How do you toss to this? All of that stuff's interesting to me. They cut promos.
Yeah.
But, like, they do these things on these shows where they're never going to act like this if they get a real show.
Yeah.
Like, you got to cook on a speeding train in 30. You know what I mean?
Well.
Like. This train's going over bumpy terrain, and you've got to cook with one hand in a bucket. And then, like, they did this thing where they were in front of a green screen.
Yeah.
And they had their own products that they put in jars, and they had to, like, pitch what they did. And they're like, okay, you're standing in front of the Great Wall of China. Sell your barbecue sauce. And the guy's, like, that's got no relationship to what he's doing. And they'll never in a million years have a show where a guy's standing in front of a green screen in the Great Wall of China.
That's the problem with
it. It's like reality TV.
And, well, we can get into Last Comic Standing on the same note, but here's what they do on those shows. Those shows are sort of the audition reality, if you want to call it, a subgenre of reality.
Yes.
ESPN did Dream Job.
They only did it once.
The WWE's done Tough Enough several times.
Right.
And what the goal of those shows, and maybe this isn't even the set out goal, but what ends up happening is because of who's involved in making the shows, it puts over the people who already have the job, meaning it makes your established Food Network stars look like stars.
Yes.
It doesn't do any. They don't really give a fuck if they get
the
next
guy,
Food Network star.
The one guy that's been successful from that is Guy Fieri.
Okay.
That's where fuck came from. With the,
that's fine.
With the backward glasses
and
the blonde.
And he's a complete moron.
He's like the big star that came off that
show.
Everybody else who's on it kind of gets a contract and hangs around in the background.
That's what they do. Yeah. I mean, Dream Job was like, the premise of Dream Job was, it's really hard to host SportsCenter and you can't do it. Here we go. We're going to let you try and we're going to watch 50 guys fail.
Right.
And we're going to pick this one guy and we're going to put him on ESPN News.
Like, look
News
how good
in the
Neil
afternoon.
Everett is at doing
SportsCenter. Yeah, and that's...
Stuart Scott, you'll
and
never be as good
It's really unfair to the people who are trying to do that because those people didn't have to go through that same process and they would have all been eliminated.
Right.
So the premise of those shows doesn't work. Last Comic Standing kind of works the same way, although I'm not sure.
Hey, make some fish tacos in this beekeeper outfit while you're standing in front of a lava field.
The premise of Last Comic Standing, though, is I can't get who – the problem with that show is I can't get who they're trying to put over. That's the problem with that show is – they're making, as I don't know if we've even, I know we've talked about it maybe even more privately. You know, the problem with Last Comic Standing is that it's a competition.
Right.
If you were just to take comedians, unknown comedians, and give them all 5 minutes in prime time, they might develop television stars who can have sitcoms, who can have careers, who can have specials, who could actually make money for the network that is putting on the show. But instead, what they do is they bring people on, they tape these profile pieces where, you know, they show these guys in their homes or doing their day job. They show them, you know, changing their baby's diapers, talking about their dream of being great
Rocky
comedians.
LaPorte, they did a whole bit
And
about his grandkids.
And the problem is, then by the time you see the guy doing stand-up, you know, if they just had Rocky LaPorte walk out and start telling his jokes, you might go, oh, this Rocky LaPorte guy's really funny. But instead, you have it in the back of your mind, well, here's a guy who's desperate to raise money because he's got 12 grandkids and he wants to get off the road. And the guy is automatically, and it's a psychological difference, but the guy is automatically less funny. They're not presenting the comedians as stars. They're taking these guys who have been working on the road for 20 years, and not all of them have. We've seen people on there that, you know, they say they've had 3 years experience and all kinds of stuff.
Well, they've got...
But they don't present them as stars. They make them look like they don't know what they're doing. And that's the problem with that show. Well,
our buddy Dave Landau.
Yes.
Dave Landau's been doing it for 14, 15 years like you and me.
Right.
And we've worked with him many times before.
He's been on the show.
They made Dave look kind of like a dickbag.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they went back and showed his whole set. They're doing this like, they do a bonus show where they like...
Well, for the holidays, they were doing extra shows.
They had an extra show where they showed more sets.
Yeah.
And or like Dave Wade, another friend of ours, was on there. He had about 4 jokes that made the air.
Yeah.
They made Landau look like a schmuck.
Well...
Because they bumped him off.
But think of this.
He did well when he was on. They showed his
whole talked about this, you know, I remember we had this conversation on the phone. In the 80s, they had something called the Young Comedian Special on HBO.
Mm-hmm.
And they would get all these guys that are at the same level, these Last Comic Standing guys out there. Were club comics. Or they were guys who were working in L.A. or New York and trying to get on TV or whatever. And they would bring these guys out and give them all, you know, 7-minute sets or whatever. And they would do specials where it was, you know, and I'm making this up somewhat, but it's not completely out of the realm of... You know, possibility that it was like Ray Romano followed by Tim Allen, followed by Jerry Seinfeld, followed by Bob Saget, you know, and they would present these guys and a lot of those guys, and not all of them, because some of them you never heard from again, but a lot, they were presented as stars because, you know, usually they were hosted by Rodney Dangerfield or some other big comic of the day. And a lot of those guys became stars off of that. They presented them as stars and they became stars. When you, these Last Comic Standing guys, that they've been doing this now, I don't know, 9 seasons in or whatever, they present these guys as schmucks. They eliminate them down to one guy. So what they do is they bring out, you know, 100 comics like they did this season. They're going to tell you one guy's really funny.
Yes.
Why not help the 99 other guys?
I don't know.
It makes no sense.
It's completely ridiculous. So they buried...
Yeah, they bury these guys.
One of the people that was on the show I'd worked with before, Mary Mack.
Okay.
She's a little bit like... Maria Bamford in her delivery.
Yeah.
Similar. I'm not saying they're the same, but think in that mode, right? She's kind of a little bit quirky girl.
All right.
I think Mary's, I've worked with her, thought she was a good comic.
Yeah.
She was on the show, and I don't know how much time she got, 30 seconds, 40. Like,
yeah.
It was like,
right.
Why were you in that 99?
They put her on, and they showed 30 seconds of her comedy and said, "You're not good enough. Get off our television show."
Why would they do that? That lesbian chick that was on there got a bunch of screen time.
But I mean, like, what's the harm in just doing a TV show? And Mary Mack gets 5 minutes. The next week, somebody else gets 5 minutes, and see where that gets them. Because I guess there is an audience that needs that competition element to it, or else it just becomes sort of like the old Evening at the Improv, which people got, you know, sick of pretty quickly.
Right.
Or actually, I don't think they got sick of it pretty quickly, but they got sick of it to where it wasn't a ratings draw anymore. But you're not, it's, you know, I hate Last Comic Standing because it's bad for comedians. And I know the argument is, how can be putting comedians on television be bad? Because you're putting comedians on, fine. Here's a reality show. Joel waxes a car. I'm not selling one ticket to my comedy show if you show me waxing my car. Right. You know, Joel mows the lawn. That's a comedian on television, but that's not selling. You know what I'm saying? Like,
you're not putting them in a good light.
You're not putting them in a good light.
When you're having comedians play Double Dare
Yeah.
And they got to run down the slide and jump
all,
in the giant
and all
pizza.
Of these things that they make them do and on these challenges, it's ridiculous. Put the comedians on. Let them do their thing. Let them look like stars. Yeah. Don't show them backstage pacing back and fucking... You see The Tonight Show. Well, you ever see on Johnny Carson on the old Tonight Show that had all those, broke all those names? Did they show people backstage pacing? Did they show people backstage talking to the camera? Oh, I hope this goes well. I hope Johnny thinks I'm funny.
No, they didn't. No.
Because it would make the comics look like fucking morons. People want, even though it's an illusion and people know it is, people want stars. People want to see confident personalities.
Yeah.
They don't want to see a bunch of nervous Nellies hoping, I hope I need the 50 grand. My kidneys braces.
That
I hope I win.
Dangerfield special, you're completely right about. That made stars out of people.
Oh, yeah. Sam Kinison,
Hicks. Dice.
Dice Clark
that was
there.
Dice's first national exposure.
Robert Schimmel was on one of those.
That really put guys over.
Roseanne got famous on
all
that.
Although, as we've said, there's you know, it'll be like Bill Hicks, Ray Romano, Judd Apatow, Janine Garofalo, and Marty Fickman.
Yeah. It's, right.
It's like.
But you know what? Marty Fickman is probably like a big comedy writer somewhere, though. You know what I mean? Like, so those guys can make it, too. You know, so he just. It's one of those things, like, if you want, you know, the premise of Last Comic, if you ask the producer of Last Comic Standing, they're saying, we're looking for the next big star, but they're not developing a star in the way that a star is normally developed. And if you could say the same thing about American Idol, you could say the same thing
America's
about... America's Got Talent. The difference, I think, with America's Got Talent is that a lot of those people, you know, would never, ever, ever be on national television doing, you know what I mean... People that do strongman acts and stuff, like, there is no venue for that kind of stuff.
Right.
So I get that you can sort of do, you're essentially doing a circus act, which is a 10-minute act anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So with that, I don't see it. But I think specifically with comedians, and believe me, the comics they've had on, I don't know if you've been following Last Comic Standing, but, you know, they put Dan Natterman was a guy that they, they focused and moved him on.
Yeah.
I actually have the video. I don't have it queued up or anything. But there was like a 12-year-old boy who told jokes on America's Got Talent.
Oh, it was the worst.
Yeah, it was terrible.
Do you have that video?
I do, but it's like not queued up at all. Oh. Like, I have the recording, but it would take me a certain amount of time to turn the thing on. You know, so yeah, maybe we'll get to that next time. We'll get to that next time because we're out of time. I got to get to. I thought we'd talk about Planet of the Apes for 2 hours, and you're running me down. But and then the last guy they had on is a guy named Joe Matarese who they put through.
Right.
And Joe Matarese is a guy that I've worked with. He's done the Gathering of the Juggalos, and he very famously insulted the Juggalos and got hit in the face with a bottle of water. And that was the last we saw of Joe Matarese. But I'm glad he was doing good on. And you know, he was kind of a moron for doing what he did at the Gathering and. No one deserves to get hit in the face with a bottle of water, but...
Well, you don't even have time,
speaking of
the Gathering,
to
talk about the gang designation placed on...
Yeah, they lost that lawsuit and whatever.
But I'm with you. On Last Comic Standing, as we all know, Jimmy Schubert got kicked off first week.
Yeah, right.
Jimmy Schubert's been around
for
20... He was probably on one of those Dangerfield young...
Oh, I'm sure he was. I'm sure he was on Evening at the Improv or any of those things.
And, okay, Jimmy Schubert on any given night...
He's also done the Gathering of the Juggalos, Jimmy Schubert.
But you know Jimmy Schubert.
Yeah, I know.
After at any given night, you put him on with anybody else on that lineup on Last Comic Standing. Although that Rod Man, now he's funny.
Jimmy Schubert also dated Mitzi Shore.
My dad was telling me how funny Rod Man was. And I went, well, you like hacky black hacky. I mean, but what do you think, empty chair?
Yeah, John Tenney.
You just know if we went to like a club, if we went to the Ice House in Pasadena on any given night of the week, Jimmy Schubert would bury everybody on that show.
Not to mention that Jimmy Schubert would be better than like Rodman when they're all doing long sets. Because Rodman can be hilarious for 5 minutes or whatever.
Yeah, right.
But
give me 30, Schubert's going to take everybody.
You're not going to listen to Rodman for 45 minutes to an hour.
He's going
to
take
annoying.
Everybody behind the fucking bar.
And that's the problem with that show. All right, so
kill that.
And I don't know. I forget what the Marlon Wayans show is, but Marlon Wayans has a TBS show about vote for funny or so. Look it up.
When are we going to do House of Wayans?
Find the Marlon Wayans. Put in Marlon Wayans TV comedy. Put in Marlon Wayans TBS show and see what comes up. Because I bet you his new show will come up that way.
Uh, t- Tyler Pitt, Funniest Wins.
Funniest Wins, yeah, that's what it's called. And I haven't even seen Funniest Wins, but it sounds even worse than Last Comic Standing. And why the Wayans brothers are deciding... Why the two least funniest idiots on television are deciding who's funny, I have no fucking idea.
Well, the thing that even makes me nuts about that is Damon is considered the best stand-up
of
the
Damon
Wayans
is,
family.
And Damon's son is on right? New Girl and stuff. And right. But those guys, they're not around.
No, it's right. Keenan,
right?
Who was the kind of mastermind of the show.
And Keenan was considered like a good writer, director
sure,
kind of guy.
But like the stand-up,
as a stand-up
is Damon.
As a stand-up, no one thinks anything of Keenan Wayans. And Marlon, I don't even know if Marlon's ever done stand-up. He was just in all of Keenan's movies.
Uh-huh.
And then Sean Wayans, SW1 from In Living Color, well, is look, in all those dumb
look,
movies too.
These so. TV shows are just an extension of the comedy contests that we see.
Yeah, that is true.
Which
too,
comedy
yeah.
clubs use as a way to fill seats
yeah,
because
to...
everybody brings their friends to try and vote for them.
Yeah.
So when you pit comics against each other, the business hurts.
Yeah. It's just, it's a bad way. It's a, you know, and I know people don't understand the psychology of making a star, but that they should.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, it's about, you know, they're probably like, you know, if you ask the Last Comic Standing producer, they're like, we presented a show. We went to the network and said, we want to have comics on for 5 minutes and present them as stars. And the network said no. Mm-hmm. And then we went back and said, well, we'll have comedians compete with each other for cash and prizes. And they went like, okay, we'll do that. And so, you know, the difference in there, you know, the producers are kind of behind the eight ball because, you know, it's like, well, do you have no show or do you have, you know what I'm saying? You know, you have an option of no show or a show that doesn't work for comics.
Yeah,
and
yes.
You know, you can argue which one's better. All right. Let's go to the goddamn Planet of the Apes.
All right.
You motherfucker.
We did all that other stuff.
Dawn of the Planet of the Apes is open.
You're very excited.
I am. Love it. In the last 2 weeks, I've watched all the Planet of the Apes movies.
You're nuts.
All eight yeah. movies. Because I picked up the... five, they reissued the original Planet of the Apes movies.
The Planet of the Apes Legacy Collection,
yeah,
which
it's
is
a
great.
Five Blu-ray set. Corey
picked it up too. It's great.
Yeah, it was only $20, and
you get all five movies, tons and tons of behind the
yeah,
scenes.
Yeah, lots of extras on there. So really good stuff. I hadn't seen most of those movies since I was a kid. Like, I saw the first two, I think, on Laserdisc, so that would have been like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So it's been a long time since I've seen the Planet of the Apes movies. All of them, and they were all fun in their own way. We can get into that. Of course, I loved Rise of the Planet of the Apes, which came out a few years ago.
Yeah,
and was this, you know, the reboot of the franchise, the second reboot of the franchise, or actually you could call it the origin story of the, because I think they're still trying to keep it in the realm of possibility.
Are they keeping it in continuity? Because I don't think they can.
Well, they're saying it is, but. You know, that Rise of the Planet of the Apes and Dawn of the Planet of the Apes and whatever comes after that will eventually dovetail into the 68 Planet of the Apes. But we'll see. You know, I mean...
I don't even know how those timelines... Okay, this is one thing about the Apes movies.
Right. I can try to help you. I've done a lot of that.
Okay, the Tim Burton movie, we just throw that out because that's its own pocket universe.
It is its own. It is its own timeline. It is its own universe. I have... Okay, go ahead. I'll let you go. And then
well, everybody is upset about the ending of the Tim Burton movie.
Okay.
I got the ending of the Tim Burton movie.
Do you want to explain? By the way, we're going to probably spoiler every... I'll try not to spoiler Dawn too bad because it's the new one, but I think everything else I think is fair game at this point.
The Planet of the Apes came out in 1968.
Yes.
Has been parodied by every film and television program and Mad Magazine and The Simpsons. For the last 50 years.
Yeah.
So you're on your own on that one.
Yeah.
And if you haven't seen Conquest of the Planet of the Apes or Beneath the Planet of the Apes, we're going to spoil those
two. Yeah, we're going to spoil those two.
But enjoy, look.
We're going to ultimately review Dawn of the Planet of the Apes because we both saw it, but...
Be advised.
Be advised,
if you want to go into these virginal and fresh, I will be discussing lots of plot holes.
Yeah.
I don't know if the continuity... I love the Apes movies, too. I was a kid. I love the Apes movies. They would have, like, Apes Week on Channel 7. And it would be, they'd show all the Apes movies. And as a kid, you'd run home to watch them and be very excited about it. They had the Planet of the Apes TV series. And I remember that being in reruns sometimes. Yeah. And
well, it was...
That would be a special they'd show
on the
weekend.
It was the best sci-fi movie franchise, by far. you know, Star Trek didn't start making movies till after Star Wars, so that wasn't in the running.
Yeah.
Now, Star Wars stole a lot of its thunder. But for me, I'm old enough to have been into sci-fi before Star Wars, and Planet of the Apes was far and away the most popular sci-fi.
Pretty
much. You know, there was like Flash Gordon that I think you would see, or you would see Godzilla and some of that stuff. Godzilla and King Kong movies and that. But really, Planet of the Apes. Yeah, Planet of the Apes was far and away the top.
In terms of being
sci-fi,
it is the progenitor of. Okay, I guess you could go back and go like Frankenstein movies.
Sure,
had a bunch of sequels.
Yeah.
Those, you know, Son of Frankenstein, Ghost of Frankenstein.
Yeah.
I guess the horror movies had sequels and stuff.
Yeah, but Creature from the Black Lagoon and all
Planet
that stuff.
Planet of the
Mummy
Apes
and...
is kind of the original sci-fi movie series.
Yeah, absolutely.
And in terms of what Star Wars did, all of that stuff,
the apes
led the way.
And big budget studio, you know, A-list director kind of ways. And not all of the Apes movies had A-list directors, but they did it. Franklin J. Schaffner was an A-list director and went on to make, you know, Patton and some other great movies. And J. Lee Thompson, who made the last two, made Guns of Navarone and a lot of big, you know, genre pictures and stuff. So, you know, they were all, you know, but that was, so Planet of the Apes being the big series of the time, these new movies are trying to at least get you back to the first one. You were going to try to spoil the end of the first one, at least, and say...
Well, okay, if you watch the Legacy Collection, and I haven't watched all five of them yet. Yeah. I did watch the first two, and I watched part of Battle, because I'd kind of forgotten that one a little bit.
Yeah.
That is... anyway, the continuity doesn't even hold up in the five... And those were made, like, one after the other.
Yeah.
Between 68 and 75, there was one every year. Right?
There was one every year, yeah. After the, I think there were 2 years between the first and the second, and then they came out every year.
So 70, 71, 72.
Yeah.
And those were like, those couldn't even keep the continuity
together.
Well,
they don't continuity, although there is, at one point, okay, there is a, there's a couple problems. Well, first of all, at the end of the second movie, of course, beneath the Planet of the Apes, the whole planet is destroyed. Okay, and
Charlton Heston. They talked. Sequels were not as big a thing.
Yeah.
Back then, I mean, there were studios felt like if you, you know, if you had a sequel, you hadn't made a good movie because this, you know what I mean? Like,
right,
the original
sequels,
should stand on its own,
yeah,
and be good. And sequels became more of an economic necessity.
But sequels also weren't. They would make sequels to popular movies, and they would bomb, I think, too. And so it wasn't like, because they would make the sequel for little money, and then they put it out, and you know they'd have different stars in the main roles, and you know.
Well, sequels were grindhouse stuff.
Yeah,
it was
they were
cheaper
films.
Major A movies didn't get sequels. Planet of the Apes was such a big hit; they had to make
another one. Yeah.
Because it was keeping 20th Century Fox alive.
Yeah, they were making musicals that were bombing.
Hello, Dolly.
Yeah.
The bottom fell out of the musicals market, and they lost a lot of money.
Yeah.
Not just them, all the studios.
Sure, yeah.
And that was at the end of the studio system, where the studios were breaking up.
Yeah, it was Dr. Doolittle and Star, and it's all on those documentaries.
Yeah.
I'll tell you the ones that put Fox behind the
terrific
eight
documentaries on this Legacy collection.
Yeah, really good stuff on there. So
there is a lot of stuff. But, okay, so in the Planet of the Apes, for those of you who haven't seen it and are willing to be spoiled by our dumbasses, George Taylor... is an astronaut from 1972
mm-hmm.
who goes through, goes into deep space and hits a time portal or something.
Well, they're supposed
to
be.
They don't even discuss it in the first movie, really.
No, but the plan was they were going to go to Mars and it was going to take a long time anyway.
And they're so far out into space.
So they were going to have to repopulate. They were going to have to populate Mars, so they brought a female astronaut with them. And
yes.
So they knew they were going to be gone for a long time, but somehow they end up being gone for 2,000 years.
Right. Well, okay, if they were traveling at faster than light speed, then relativity would make sense.
Sure.
I think they kind of bungled the science on this.
Well, they talk about, I don't know if they talked about black holes, but there's theoretical physics, you know, theoretical physics would say that this is possible, but, you
right.
know.
Okay. Okay, so, anyway, so what happens is Taylor and his two partners and the girl who dies in Root, because there's a leak in her... sleeping pod.
Yeah.
And that's really creepy in the first Planet of the Apes.
Yes.
Because they're all talking about, like, And there's that. What was her name?
I forget her name in the first.
Like, and she was gonna be our Eve, and we were all gonna take turns.
Yes,
putting one in a belly.
Yes,
you know, just like a really weird.
Yeah, it is. It is.
And so anyway, the three astronauts crash, and end up discovering they're on a world where apes are the predominant species, sure. And man runs wild in the fields and steals the crops, and the apes hunt them down and put them in cages and shoot them. And the other two astronauts are killed in the process of being hunted and round up. And Taylor is left alone, shot in the throat box, so he can't talk.
Right. Well, humans can't talk, so they the premise in the first one is that the apes can't tell that Taylor is a man, a space a time traveler.
Right. He's wearing tattered rags.
He's wearing tattered rags and he can't speak, so they assume he's just... And he's got a giant beard from sleeping in the pod for that long. So he looks like a wild... You know, man.
A primitive ape.
Primitive
man. Michigan
wild
dog
man. Yes.
So anyway. And then, of course, he's taken in by veterinary biologists, Dr. Zira and Dr. Cornelius.
Yes.
And they Zira just figures out he's smart.
Yes.
Calls him Bright Eyes. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I'm recapping Planet of the
Apes. Yeah, but get to the point of...
The point is... at the end of the first Planet of
the timeline.
At the end of the first Planet of the Apes, Taylor. Now the ape society is put into chaos and turmoil by the emergence of this smart human.
Yeah.
Which Dr. Zaius knows the whole story.
Yeah.
He knows the reality, and that's why they've
walled
off the Forbidden Zone.
They don't. What the theory is that their religion says that, you know, apes did not descend from man. Which is you know, when you watch that, you go, well, apes didn't, you know. So what it is that if they knew the truth about that man was once smart, it would ruin their religion, essentially. Yes.
Well, in the same way, if somehow we found out that human life on Earth was seeded by some alien race.
Right, yeah. Then
as soon as an alien shows up, the whole fucking apple cart's going to get overturned on Earth, right?
I'll give you, if an alien shows up.
Wouldn't that fuck everybody?
It would fuck everything.
Every religion would go right out the window.
Absolutely.
They'd all be fucked.
Right.
Well, no, you know what? Some of them would like double down on their religion.
Right.
They'd go, no, Allah said that this would happen.
No, if it happened, if in a sci-fi, if talking cats came down, we would kill them.
Right.
You know, I mean, as much as people would go.
But it would cause the society. And
yes, of course it would.
The ape society.
Yeah.
Dr. Zaius is trying to protect the ape society from collapsing.
Yeah, absolutely. Dr. Zaius is. And Zira and Cornelius are open to the suggestion that maybe there were human beings who could once talk, or it's possible for human beings to talk.
They're scientists. They want to get to the truth.
So anyway, so Taylor escapes.
And discovers that he is on Earth in the future.
Yes.
And that that mankind has been wiped out by its own greed and folly.
Yeah.
And how the apes survived
They find a talking baby doll as well. A lot of people forget that, but that was the precursor to it.
Yes. Well, they go in the subway and there's human artifacts.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you realize in the sequel that there's all kinds of human artifacts down there.
Well, all of New York City is buried.
Subway trains and Queensboro Bridge exit signs. Anyway, so then in the sequel, they send another astronaut right back.
Well, they say that it's the rescue team for Taylor and his crew.
Yes.
Are these other guys, and these guys land, and the guy, you know.
Now, they say this guy goes through a Brent.
Brent, yeah.
Played by James Franciscus.
Yes.
Goes through a time portal.
Right.
They actually claim that he goes through a portal.
Yeah, so they do explain that a little bit.
It was not explained in the first movie.
Yeah.
So you're already getting a continuity jump.
Well, you're just getting an explanation.
Now,
where there was none.
Brent, okay, so Taylor thinks that he's been in space for 2,000 years.
Yeah.
So obviously his clock malfunctioned and he went through the portal because...
Well, the clock said 2,000 years, said 36, whatever.
Because when Brent finally finds Taylor, Taylor knows him.
Well, because they knew each other in 1973.
Okay.
They both traveled 2,000 years into the future.
So whether they were actually in space
Brent went to look for Taylor.
Whether they were in space for 2,000 years, whether relativity played a role somehow... Or whether there was a portal remains ambiguous and vague.
They were in 2,000 years, but the ship was not out there for 2,000 years, but Earth was out there for 2,000 years, if that makes sense. Okay. So anyway, so What are we trying to say here, Corey?
What I'm saying is the first movie...
Okay, you're saying the movies don't make sense. I think the first two, the continuity's okay.
Yes, it falls apart
because,
after
that. But the thing is, you know, when they get to the third movie, which Escape from the Planet of the Apes, which is a cheaper movie, that they said, we can't make another Apes movie because of all the makeup.
Right.
So they said, we'll make a movie with three apes, and we'll do that by putting it on present-day Earth. So then what they do is they say that, well, as the nuclear bomb was going off, that Dr. Zira
elsewhere.
And Cornelius... met some other doctor. I forget, Dr. Milo, I think his name yes. was. Dr. Milo, who we never meet in any of the movies. Or
well, who's the young sidekick in the first one?
I forget his
Isn't
name.
Isn't that also Sal Milio, but he's Sal...
No, it's played by a different actor.
Okay.
It's not Sal Milio.
Okay. Why
Sal Minio. Because Dr. Milo is a guy who knew how to repair spaceships for some reason.
Uh-huh.
Which they never explained that why, you know,
why
the
he knows how to
were
do
on
that.
Horsebacks and clubbing people, knew how to, you know, fix spaceships. But they make up that they took Taylor's spaceship and went through the same time portal backwards. And now
Taylor's spaceship, which sank into the middle
which
of
sank,
a lake
yeah.
in the Forbidden
but,
Zone.
Somehow,
which is like a three-day ride.
So during the events of the first and second Planet of the Apes movie, somehow this spaceship was being excavated and refurbished. We don't see any of that in those movies, but that's what happened. So then they go back to Earth, and you know Cornelius and Dr. Zira are being interviewed by the government, and it's actually Escape from Planet of the Apes, probably, and I think arguably, the best or you know second best of the original Ape sequels. I think
Escape?
Yeah, I think Escape to me is the second best. You're going to say the second one is
I like
the
Beneath
next best?
The Planet of the Apes, but
right.
I know I'm crazy on that. because I like it because, one, I like anything okay. set in the ape society.
Sure, right.
I like Ape City.
The movies are better in the on Ape Planet. I agree with you.
I love General okay. Ursus.
Yeah.
He's got great speeches right. about you know... we'll go and put our boots on them and stamp and put our flags and guns.
Right.
Like, I love...
General Ursus is from Chicago. He's got, like,
oh,
a
I
real...
Love
he's
General,
got a brassy...
I love General Ursus.
A brassy accent.
Yeah, yeah,
where
yeah.
He's, the only good human is a dead human.
Oh, there's a great scene where they're in the sauna in Monkey Suit.
Yeah, right.
Like, they're in full gorilla suits.
Right.
That's great.
Yeah. So, I like the second movie. My problem with that is the mutants. That when the mutants... Even though...
I love that.
Yeah,
that's crazy too. There's a surviving cult of human mutants
right.
with telepathic powers
right.
that live in the subway tunnels
and
in the Forbidden
and they're
Zone.
As intelligent as you know
they're modern human
and even more intelligent because they've evolved for 2,000 years.
They have
so they're more
powers.
Intelligent than obviously the stupid humans that don't talk. But the big secret there is that they you know they don't. That they don't have to speak English to each other. They don't have to speak
right. They can
audibly.
Speak. Well, everybody on this planet, by the way, speaks English. How were the, okay? So the monkeys were taught English.
The monkeys,
and that's explained
English.
In another one. This is some deep ape shit.
It is right. But so hey, getting back to the third movie. So the plants are. They explain how the now where you get into the
you're missing,
divergent storyline.
Part about the mutants.
Yeah,
they worship an atomic bomb.
They do. Yes.
This is such 60s.
It is
heavy-handed.
Well,
also the chimpanzees. Okay, the gorillas are like, we know that there's freaks out there because our scouting party's in the Forbidden Zone where
yeah.
we're not supposed to be somehow. They went looking for Taylor. Is that what
yes.
happened?
Well.
They went chasing after Taylor and found that there were mutants in the woods or in the Forbidden Zone, in the mountains.
They, yeah. There's
and so the gorillas are like, we have to go and destroy these humans that are still surviving.
Yes.
And so, the chimps, because you've got three strata
right.
of society
yeah, we should
in
explain
the apes.
That, yes.
You have the orangutans, they're like the political and religious
they're
elite.
They're the law and religion.
They're the
yeah.
religious and political elite, right? They're the
then
rulers.
You have the chimps are the scientists.
Yes.
And sort of the.
Scientists and doctors and engineers.
Yeah, so.
And whatever.
Yeah.
They're kind of the working intelligentsia.
Yeah.
And then the gorillas are the day labor. And the warriors.
Yeah, security, yes.
Yeah, the guys who chop the trees and whatever.
Yeah.
So, the muscle.
Yeah.
The gorilla army is ready to go invade the I love Beneath. It's so crazy.
All right, but Beneath, okay. So anyway, let's get to the third one. Beneath.
Right.
Beneath
so at the end of Beneath, because Charlton Heston didn't want to come back for another one,
yeah.
spoiler, he activates the, everybody gets killed.
Right.
He activates the bomb.
Yeah.
Then is it intimated that because of this giant world-breaking explosion of the Alpha Omega missile,
Yeah.
Which was the biggest nuclear weapon ever made,
yeah,
that the mutants worship and say, bless the holy bomb and the holy fallout or whatever,
right,
they say. It blows the whole world up.
Yes.
And creates the rift in time, which then subsequently Taylor had come through in the first.
No, there are paradoxes. Let me explain. I'm going to set you straight because I watched all
right.
By the time you get to the third movie, okay, the paradox is beginning to.
What is this movie?
This is Escape from the Planet of the Apes theme.
Okay. Right.
When you get to the third movie, the explanation is where the movies differ is in how. And there's about five different explanations, if you include the Tim Burton one and the new ones, about how the apes became intelligent, okay?
Yeah.
The first explanation we're given ever in the series is in Escape from the Planet of the Apes, when Cornelius is being interviewed and he says that there was an ape named Aldo. And Aldo... Okay, actually, what happens is there's a virus that wipes out the dogs and cats. This happens in the 70s.
Which is a great... That's such a great
right.
gimmick cop-out.
Yeah, okay. So the dogs and cats are dead. So human beings have to take in apes to become pets.
Yes.
So they take in chimps and gorillas and orangutans as pets. Mm-hmm. And as they live with human beings, the apes become manservants.
Right.
As they live with humans, they become more intelligent. Eventually, the apes decide that they're going to fight back.
This all happens in like 20 years.
Well, this is all just explained. This is from the new movie. This is all explained in an interview that Cornelius gives to one of the government officials in right. Escape from the Planet of the Apes. Okay, the problem is that at the end of Escape from the Planet of the Apes, Dr. Zero, of course, gives birth to a baby chimp.
Yes,
that baby chimp is hunted by the government.
Mm-hmm.
The baby chimp is ultimately killed by the government. But what they fail to understand is that the chimp was swapped out at Ricardo Montalban Circus. People think I'm making this
for
up.
A dumb chimp.
For a dumb chimp. So the intelligent chimp, which is actually the son of Zero and Cornelius, survives and is living in Ricardo Montalban Circus.
Yes, Ricardo Montalban is sympathetic to
yes.
the
so
apes.
That brings us to... But here's the problem now. Now you no longer have Aldo as the leader of the resistance and the first intelligent ape. You've now introduced that you have an intelligent ape who is now derived from the Planet of the Apes that Taylor was on because his parents were smart. So you have... Now, that baby chimp is called Caesar. And in the next movie, which is Conquest of the Planet of the Apes, you get to see Caesar stand up to the human beings and lead
now,
the ape revolution.
Somehow in 20 years...
Yes, because it takes place in 1991.
Somehow in 20 years from 1972 when Taylor left...
Yes.
To 1991, is that when Conquest
yes.
is at? Apes have not only become smarter... They've begun to be shaped more like men and walk around wearing jumpsuits and
yeah.
push brooms.
And that is one of the problems I have with that movie. I think that's the weakest.
There's not enough of a time gap right. between... That's
well,
not any
they,
far enough future.
They become servants because... Well, but they say the cat and dog virus happened in 73, which would have been right after Taylor
but
left.
But the problem science
yeah,
fiction has all the time
yeah.
is they don't space apart how far...
Right.
Changes in shit happen.
Sure, and we'll get to that with the new movies.
Human beings, now, you and I are, maybe we're not taller because we're not the tallest people.
Yeah.
But human beings are now bigger and bulkier than they were 70 years ago.
Okay, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
If you look at, like, if you go into, like, an apartment building in the 30s, or, you know, if things are in a smaller
right, yeah, okay,
scale.
Yeah, 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 sure, yeah.
People are getting bigger.
Yeah.
But that's 70, 80 years.
Yeah, sure, yeah, yeah.
20 years is not enough time
well,
for shit to change.
Well, apes, okay, but let's, okay, you got to play along. So apes.
I have electronics
apes, but now
that
you've
still
got,
work that are 20 years old.
But now you have two timelines, at least, of how the apes rose up. You have the Aldo story, and now you have the Caesar story. So the Caesar story plays itself out in Conquest of the Planet of the Apes.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually a very brutal movie. It's almost like a prison movie.
It is very
and
funky.
It's very dark.
70s like.
And it's all
Watts prison riots. It's like
yeah.
Watts riots.
And it's all shot in Century City, which was like this Fox development that's all like concrete. And
right.
so it's very ugly looking, and it's not I think it's the worst of those movies. Some people love it because it's brutal and, you know, there's no comedy in it at all. I mean, it's
no,
completely
it's very
dark.
Serious.
And but anyway,
well, they're like they're not just like training gorillas to do domestic
yes.
stuff. They're like torturing them.
Yeah, they are. So
the fascist government, But see, I think
in the 90s, the government, too, is they're Nazis now. In the
I would actually say that the apes' religion in the first film is probably the first religion I think I've ever thought was actually prudent.
Okay.
I mean, there's examples of things in human in our real religions.
Yeah.
But the ape religion was all like, don't go in the forbidden zone.
Yeah.
Beware the beast man.
Yeah.
Ape shall not kill ape.
Yeah.
I can't disagree with any of those credos.
That's fine, and that's all, you know. That's
meanwhile, the mutants are worshiping in a fucking nuclear missile.
So let's get to the next paradox, because you have two timelines there, okay? So then Caesar, in Battle of the Planet of the Apes, Caesar is then at war with, there's the gorilla warlord, Aldo. Mm-hmm. Now, they don't explain if that's the same Aldo that would have been in the story that's told in Escape, but Claude Akins... Picture Claude Akins for a minute. If you don't know Claude, you'll know who he is if you Google search Claude Akins. He was like a country, like a bumpkin actor.
Yes.
And Claude Akins plays the warlord Aldo, and him and Caesar, they end up going to war with the remaining mutant humans who are left over from Conquest of the Planet.
Well,
of the
those
Apes.
Are like the early version of the mutants we'll get in
beneath
the planet.
Right.
Of the Apes.
So they're somehow they're the bridge between. You know, because these movies all take place before the second movie.
Well,
the
does anyone explain how the apes survived the nuclear holocaust?
What? Oh, the nuclear holocaust?
Because, like, somehow humans
killed each other, yeah.
We're all wiped out.
Well, because...
But the apes prospered.
Because we blew up the cities. And the apes didn't live in the cities.
The apes were in the jungle.
Although, if you listen to the fiction, the apes were humans... Servants.
Domestic servants.
So they would have been...
Conquest
okay.
kind of fucks the whole
it
thing
does,
up.
It does. It does. And that's why it's not as good. But So Conquest of the Planet of the Apes. I mean, Battle for the Planet of the Apes then at that point. You know, it's a war between the humans and the apes. The apes basically repel the humans and win. Okay, so there you go. But then when you get to the new movies...
So that's set farther in the future than Conquest, but in the past from the first movie.
Right. The problem is, by the time you get to the end of Battle for the Planet of the Apes... In that fiction, Taylor can't come back to that planet.
Because it's not the same.
Right.
So the whole thing...
Well, he couldn't go to that planet. See, this is where it's getting to a paradox. Because you have, essentially, the son of the father, the son of Cornelius... was the leader of the uprising, so therefore Cornelius can't exist.
It's different.
So even if
Taylor
does go, even if Taylor... That's our exit music. Oh, no, that's the Planet of the Apes vocal. We're here at the end.
Oh.
So even if Taylor does go back, it would be a different timeline. So it does sort of eliminate the timeline of the first two movies. But
And also, I think, doesn't the whole thing create a paradox in that the human society becomes as the apes feared?
Yeah.
When they discover that there's talking apes.
Yeah.
People lose their fucking minds,
yeah.
And it becomes like a fascist dictatorship.
Sure. Okay,
thus facilitating the apes rising up.
Yes.
So, like, the whole thing's a paradox. If Taylor doesn't go to future, Zero and Cornelius come back,
but Taylor didn't live in a fascist society.
He lived in
day 1970s as we know it.
Right.
So Taylor's world. Yeah, it's. Again, you have the cat and dog virus. That is the sort of the pinpoint. Now, if you want to go to... Okay, as we're talking about the new movies and how those play into the original Planet of the Apes, you have... Because our societal... We no longer sort of fear nuclear war and, you know, racism and tribalism is not as a hot-button issue. It still is.
Really?
It's not... People aren't, you know, standing in the streets with a sign and
race,
you know, that
is
stuff.
Still a massive issue.
But
it's not like we're not turning water cannons and
it's not the forefront of
German shepherds.
It's not
people.
The forefront of what we worry about anymore. Okay, nuclear. So now we have, you know, now we worry about, you know, infectious disease. And all that stuff. So
well, then you get zombies,
contagion. Yeah,
plagues.
Well, you have zombies, plagues. So then, when we get to the new movies, we have a human being creates a drug that he gives to a chimpanzee that makes the chimpanzee smart. That's Rise of the Planet of the Apes. He brings the
isn't that funny? How, like, you're right. In the 60s, everything was nukes.
Yeah,
like Spider-Man got his powers from a radioactive spider.
Sure,
you know, and now it's like we do gradually. Now Spider-Man got his power from designer drugs.
Yeah, that's...
Like, they've changed how things work.
Well, that's what people are afraid of now. People are afraid of bird flu and H1N1.
The Planet of the Apes movies really did, I think, brilliantly kind of reflect...
Oh, absolutely.
...what was going on.
Yeah, in the 60s.
Well, because beneath the Planet of the Apes, the chimps are protesting.
Yeah, there's chimp protesters.
They're like hippie protesters.
Yeah,
they're
no
like,
war.
Yeah, man, yeah. Put your guns away. Yeah. And I love that. It's ridiculous.
No, it's great.
But it's also kind of great. But, and the 60s and 70s were like that.
Yeah.
Where there was just like really outrageous, bold, you know, either environmental or whatever statements in pop culture.
Yeah. So to get back to the fiction of Planet of the Apes, now you have a different origin story for how the apes rose up. You have this one ape who became intelligent. Mm-hmm. He used his intelligence to spread that, that whatever, HN13 or whatever it was called, to the other apes in Rise of the Planet of the Apes, which made them smart. They escape from their pen. They take over San Francisco. Boom, boom,
oh,
boom.
You get into Dawn.
So now that's your origin story. Now you get into Dawn, but the thing is now you've got, by that point, you've got now a third origin story for how their apes rose up. You have the one that Cornelius told in Escape from Planet of the Apes. You have the one that played itself out in Conquest and Battle of the Planet of the Apes. And now you have this one in Rise of the Planet of the Apes. You really have like four... And then you can even consider, if you want to consider the Planet of the Apes, the Tim Burton one, which has its own contradictions and its own paradoxes built into it. But let's not even continue along that lines. But you would get to the 68 Planet of the Apes because here you have the human beings almost completely being wiped out. And that was by the neighbor when the chimp bit the pilot. When John Lithgow had dementia. He tries to drive the neighbor's car. The neighbor comes out to, you know, get John Lithgow out of the car. He starts fucking with him. The chimp sees Caesar sees that. He comes out, bites the pilot's finger. The pilot now has this contagion. He flies all over the world, spreads the disease. So now that's your new thing for the apes are smart. The humans are all dying. So they have explained how you get to the 68 Planet of the Apes.
Yeah,
and they did say that there were
the...
astronauts in the first movie. They didn't come to this at all. That there were astronauts that were on a Mars mission as well in Rise of the Planet of the Apes,
right?
Which would explain why a guy would land on a Planet of the Apes in the future.
A planet of the apes.
So let's review. Let's review because I think one thing that Rise of the Planet of the Apes, I think, was universally enjoyed. I think most people liked that movie.
I had problems with it.
Okay,
and
but...
my problem was James Franco.
Okay.
I really thought the humans were kind of a... You didn't have anything to root for. You're really trying to... I guess that movie was really rooting for the apes.
Yes. And that's the other thing about movies. They change between who's the hero and who's the villain. Sometimes it's the humans, sometimes it's the apes.
Sometimes Godzilla is just there... to destroy things.
Yeah.
And sometimes he's very carefully trying to fight the other monster and be a good guy.
Yeah.
So they do change the storyline.
Yeah. And but I one thing I liked about Franco in that first of all, you have a series that Charlton Heston is the actor most closely associated with the thing, and he's considered a bad actor. That I think Franco and some of the overacting that those chimp handlers did and that stuff, I thought it kind of fit the series a little bit, where humans were a little
too
stupid.
Love
and
Charlton Heston's insane performance in Planet of the Apes.
Doesn't that work with some of the acting in Rise of the Planet of the Apes?
That was very of the stuff. Look, Shatner.
Yeah.
There were guys that just went as big as all outdoors.
Right. Yeah.
It wasn't until I guess Warren Beatty was kind of the first one that brought it in.
Well, you would say like Dustin Hoffman, Robert De Niro.
Beatty, Hoffman, those guys brought the acting down.
Al Pacino,
down.
Yeah.
Of Kirk Douglas.
Sure, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I love Kirk Douglas.
Yeah.
Watch like The Bold and the Bad and the Beautiful. Just like
over-emoting.
Yeah.
Listen here, you dirty pigs. Like those guys went so
big,
so bold. That's when men were men, Joel.
Yeah.
That's when a man
could
just go out, snatch a fucking fish out of the river and strangle it, then go bang three broads, go down to Jilly's, drink with the boys till 4 a.m, smoke cigars, drink some bourbon and whiskey. It was a goddamn better time.
All right, it was a better time. But I thought the acting in Rise of the Planet of the Apes sort of kept in with that, the way the humans were sort of... Like, you sort of saw the beginnings of...
Yeah.
You know, a world where a world that could destroy itself because people were so stupid. And I think one of the changes.
This is part of the thing with apocalypse movies.
Yeah.
They're always trying to tell us, oh, we're on the edge of the brink and we're going to die. But it's never like what actually keeps the world afloat.
Yeah.
Self-interest.
Okay.
That is why, like, everything maintains its order.
Yes.
Is because we're all fairly self-interested, and it's better for the shit to not blow up.
Yeah.
And movies are always paranoid about, sci-fi movies are always paranoid about the worst possible outcome.
Yeah.
And what's going to happen in a plague and a virus. And here we are, 2014 years after, you know, Galilee and that shit, and we're still having human society and civilization, and we have better stuff than we've ever had.
That's true. Well, what was your point again?
I'm saying the world. The world didn't end in 1978.
Right, I understand that, but
we didn't nuke each other.
For the purposes of the movies, I thought that Rise,
yeah,
the tone of Rise, sort of matched the tone of the 68 movie, at least on some level. And I think that if there's a problem with Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, is I think that the humans, for some reason now, all the human beings are really smart. In this new movie,
they're smarter than they were. Well, you know what? These are the people that survived.
These are people that survived. But they explain in the movie that the reason they're not dead is because they're genetically
immune,
which, you know, again, kind of doesn't make sense.
But they're also not just genetically immune to the plague.
Yeah.
They survived all the riots and the chaos
of society falling apart. Yeah.
So these are presumably the smarter people.
These are the best people we had left, okay?
I think so. Except for the one jagass that causes all the problems.
Kirk Acevedo. Yeah,
here's the problems I have with this movie.
Okay.
Which I did overall enjoy.
I did too. I also had problems
with it. As I said this morning on the TV show,
I didn't see that review.
The best things about the film are the special effects.
Of course.
I normally don't give a shit about CGI. I kind of go, I'm tired of it, a little over it.
Yeah.
Everybody's like, but the CGI in Transformers. That didn't look like anything that would ever be real.
Sure, yeah.
This is like real looking.
Right, yeah.
The orangutan, whose name is Maurice, by the way, which is a nod to Maurice Evans, who played Dr. Zaius.
Yes.
There's lots of little.
Yeah, there are lots of little winks. Well, the name Caesar was carried over, even though it's not really related to. Yeah, okay.
Caesar, Maurice, there's lots of little winks.
Well, there's Cornelia, who is the wife of Caesar.
Right. Who's, you know. There's little winks to the original movies.
Yeah.
Anyway, the orangutan looks fantastic.
Yeah, the orangutan's awesome looking.
The gorilla, there's a couple gorillas. They look great.
Yeah.
The chimps look a little off model, but they're still very impressive.
Well, you know, they had to make the chimps all look individual, and so I think sometimes they look looking. Yeah. But you know what? The effects are so good that you actually just forget that they're effects, which is the best kind, where you just go, okay, this world really exists. I'm here. I'm into it. I thought that if this movie had problems, I thought the pacing was weird. I thought there was a lot of chimps just doing sign language to each other, and I thought that was very boring. And you know, I thought I liked the end of Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Some of the chimps are smart and can talk.
Yeah,
but most of them are still communicating with sign language.
Well, I think that's explained a little bit by they were dosed.
Caesar was obviously drugged.
Well, they were dosed.
Odo.
No, Kobo was because he was the bad chimp. He was the replacement for Caesar at the lab.
Right.
Yeah.
But then, like, Caesar's children and his wife can kind of talk?
Well, because they would genetically have Caesar's genes, and they're not apes that were born as regular apes.
What about his wife, though? Where did she?
Well, she was dosed was at the she was dosed okay. At the place where Caesar was held after he bit the guy. So anyway, I thought that the slow parts were a little too slow.
It's a very
even though it's intelligent stuff that they're doing, and it's better than your Hollywood blockbuster movie.
I'll tell you why the original Planet of the Apes is a classic.
Yeah,
that thing, even when it is bogging a little bit, when they're walking through the desert, and there's like 20 minutes of them.
The opening
from when they crash to when they find the ape.
Yeah,
you know, it's 20 minutes of that, and that's a little slow. But even that. Heston's giving these crazy speeches. Everything you ever knew is dust.
And it's shot really well.
Understand.
It's great looking.
It's brilliant. The Jerry Goldsmith theme music is genius. That's just a great, entertaining movie from start to finish. The whole thing zips along and just has pace. And this does. And this gets a little...
Yeah, it does.
You're right. It gets a little gelatinous.
And I thought that, you know, the action, which, you know, the action I thought in Rise of the Planet of the Apes, I thought worked a little bit more. It was choreographed better for the screen. Here, it's sort of indistinct what's happening. You know, you see that like the chimps are going crazy and they're starting to attack the people, but there's no real set pieces that really worked that were terribly memorable. I didn't think in this.
I thought the gorilla invasion was pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, it was good, but to me it didn't work as well as the first movie. And the first movie is very devoid of action, Rise of the Planet of the Apes. It's really only the last, like, 15 minutes of it. And this movie is sort of billed as, well, this is the big war. But to me, it needed... Here's what I feel about it, is this feels like every sequel, middle, trilogy movie. Meaning they can't really give you the full Monty. I feel like it's only two acts. I feel like I wanted that third act, and they tease it a little bit. I think a minor, you know, where they say, you know, they have this radio and they're trying to contact and get help, and they're like, you know, by the end they go, well, look, help is on the way and they'll be here soon, but we never see that because that's going to be the third movie. And so I feel like they sort of have to not give you, you know, they have to jerk you off but have you not come in this movie.
What I'm going to say about this movie.
And so I thought it left me wanting a big finish. It sort of reminded me a little bit of like the Two Towers in the Lord of the Rings thing, which once you've seen all three Lord of the Rings movies, the Two Towers doesn't bother you anymore. But when you went to the theater and saw the Two Towers and it sort of ended the way it ended and you didn't get the big finale, you were sort of like, ah, shit, I want to see, you know, I want the next bit. And
well, in Conquest of the Planet of the Apes, they changed the ending. There's like two different endings.
Right, 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 yeah.
And the original ending was straight up, fuck all y'all.
Yeah.
We're going to take over this bitch. And the monkeys were jumping up and down and burning it all down.
Yeah, they... Yeah.
And in the... They
smashed the governor's face in with a rifle butt.
They then they then modified the ending to soften it a little bit.
Yes.
That kind of happens here.
A little bit, yeah, yeah.
There's a little bit more of a kind of a...
Well...
Now, not to spoil it, let's leave it all, but there's kind of a little bit more of a... The human side and the chimp side are both kind of expressed... And I would have said, look, personally, I was on Gary Oldman's side. Wipe them out.
Well, you have the humans have their, I forget the actor's name, but the guy who was in Zero Dark
Jason
30.
Jason Clark.
And he is sort of the compassionate human leader. Then there's Gary Oldman, who is, I'm going to be, let's just kill them all. And then you have the chimps. You have Caesar, who is compassionate to humans because he was raised by a human. And then you have Koba, who is like, fuck the humans, let's kill them all. Mm-hmm. And so you have these four characters who are sort of, you know. By the way, Gary Oldman, it's weird the way they use Gary Oldman in this movie. First, Gary Oldman's not in the movie. Then he shows up for 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. Then you forget you even saw Gary Oldman. And then an hour later, he comes back for 5 minutes. And then he comes back.
He was used sparingly.
Used sparingly. And
they didn't always really... Kobo is always a bad chimp.
Yes.
You know he's the villain.
And it's set up that way in Rise. Yeah, he's
uglier than Caesar.
Yeah, he's got scars from the procedures that
they
did. And
you just know he's the bad seed. Mm-hmm. Why they tolerate him? Because Ape shall not kill Ape.
Because Ape cannot kill him, and he helped Caesar lead the uprising of the apes the first time.
I would have beat his ass to begin with. Right? That's, you know what I mean? Like, this is
Caesar should have put, well,
here's the problem I have with this movie, and maybe that's part of the point they're making, is that, you know, man is foolish and we'll make mistakes, and even the apes make mistakes. But there's certain points in the movie where plot holes just happen.
Yeah.
At a point when the humans desperately need security in the colony in San Francisco, there's no security.
No.
They don't. And yet Gary Oldman is like very meticulously like setting up a communication grid to talk to other survivors, trying to repower the energy supplies, the food. They're building this colony. And yet then they occasionally just act like complete and total morons.
Yeah.
And the same with the apes. The apes just do some irrational stuff.
Yeah.
Just to advance the plot.
The apes just kind of say, hey, leave us alone. But the plot is that the humans have to go in because there's like one dam that could power...
The dam is on the other side of the bridge
where the apes have colonized. Yes. And so the humans want to make this bridge produce electricity so they can live on that. And, the other thing the movie doesn't do is it doesn't give you that look at what's going to happen next. It just sort of ends, and they kind of go like, well, we've contacted, and these guys are going to come, and then, you know, Caesar and Koba do their thing, and when that's resolved, you kind of go, you know, I wanted a little bit more of, because that's the one thing about Planet of the Apes is that not only do you see the movie you see, but you speculate on what could come next. And that's what's great about the movies in their whole history. And even the Tim Burton movie tries to leave you with, like, this tantalizing view of, you know, Earth as it stands, you know, where, you know, apes are in charge. But this movie kind of just doesn't, it just sort of ends. It doesn't really leave you with, you know, it's sort of, it's more of an end of the world movie than it is a Planet of the Apes rise movie, if that makes sense. Does that make sense at all? Like, it's more of an apocalyptic movie than an apes building their shit movie, which is kind of what I wanted to see more.
It's really debatable who's in a better position at the end of this movie.
Right.
Because I don't think the apes are going to know how to run the stuff in San Francisco.
No, but I wanted that. And when Tenny and I were talking about it after, I said, you know, I wanted to see an ape, you know, I wanted to see an ape in a uniform. I wanted at some point in this movie to see an ape put a helmet on or something. Like, I wanted that, all that stuff you see in 68.
You don't really see that.
You wanted to see.
They've got
bits
guns
of that.
And horses.
They've got guns. Yeah, they got guns and horses, and so we're getting there, but it didn't feel like a big enough step. It felt like, you know, it felt like half a movie to me. Even though I enjoyed it a lot and I recommend it to people, it still didn't.
It had some weaknesses to it, but I did enjoy it overall. I thought it was.
I did too.
I thought it was well acted.
Extremely, extremely.
Even
well
Carrie
done.
Russell.
Yeah,
You know, she had a pretty substantial part.
Yeah,
usually,
I mean,
usually the woman in this is just like,
they don't.
No, she actually had a pretty good part. And
all right,
had a role. The philosophical stuff was good. The circle of violence and when will the violence end and all that. That's all part of. That's all in tribute to the original movies, which were politically.
I want
charged.
You to do two. I'm going to do two things here, and then we're going to wrap it up. We're going to first question is this or Godzilla for summer blockbusters?
I would say. This
is better than, you know, I think Godzilla worked better as its own picture than this. Meaning, first of all, if you didn't see Rise of the Planet of the Apes, don't even go to Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. Not like you won't be able to follow it along, but I think it'll be a lot more enjoyable if you saw the James Franco movie.
Well, they do in the beginning give you an intro.
That's what I mean. Like, you won't be lost, but you'll enjoy it a lot more if you have the backstory.
There's a lot of little nuances.
Yeah, so I think you should definitely see Rise.
Yeah.
I think Godzilla stands on its own as a better movie, even though Kenny's like, well, Godzilla didn't make any sense at all. I'm like, well, look, dude, at some point you gotta just, you know.
It's a Godzilla movie.
Yeah, it's a Godzilla movie. It's an ape movie.
And I'm not.
I thought Godzilla's action and pacing was a little better than this Planet of the Apes movie.
I'm not slighting Godzilla. I think this is just a better story.
The story's better
in spectacle in Godzilla is bigger and better.
Yeah.
And certainly when Godzilla's actually whooping that ass, it's great. But this has a better overall story.
No, I'm with you. It's a smarter movie than Godzilla, but I actually think Godzilla is a better, it's a more fun movie to watch. But it's very tough to me because they're both, you know, sort of, they're both these, you know, hotshot directors taking over these big franchises, and so you kind of go, which is better? But anyway, okay, now can you rank? We'll include the Tim Burton movie, which, God, I'd love to break down the Tim Burton movie.
Rank
two
the
hours.
Apes movies?
I would love to. I could do an hour on the Tim Burton piece of shit. but we're not even going to have time.
Oh.
Can you rank? There's 8 Apes movies, Corey.
Yeah.
Can you rank them from best
rank
to worst?
All of the Apes movies.
Yes.
Just my personal preference.
Yeah, but you know, that's all I'm asking. All
right. I would say Planet of the Apes is obviously a masterpiece.
Okay. 68 Planet of the Apes.
That's on like any list of like great movies.
Okay, yeah.
I would put it on.
Okay.
It's a classic.
Right.
Rod Serling, you can feel his influence. And I know he got rewritten, but you can certainly feel
the Serling big twist influence. Is that the Planet of the Apes is actually Earth was Rod Serling's invention.
Well, a lot of those speeches sound very Rod Serling, too. Okay. I'm going to go Beneath.
You're going for the
I like Beneath
first
a lot.
Sequel.
I do. It's crazy. It's a wacky movie. And it does have a lot of kind of churning the plot where Brent just runs around and goes, hey, what's next?
Yeah.
Then I'd go this, Dawn.
You like Dawn? Okay.
Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
That's number 3.
And then maybe Rise.
Okay, Dawn
and
then Rise.
Escape, Conquest, Battle, and the Tim Burton.
Tim Burton last.
It's so bad.
I know. Well, I'm
maybe I would put it above Bad.
I differ from you.
I would maybe put the Timberland.
I'm gonna mix it up on you.
I'm debating.
I'm gonna say my number one is actually Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
No,
which I know, you know, hey, it didn't work for everybody, but it's a great origin story. I love it. Then I'm going 68, the original, for number two.
Mm-hmm.
For three, I think I'm gonna go Escape.
Okay.
And it's Escape and Dawn are right there. I thought Escape was probably the most intelligent movie,
mm-hmm.
even though it's so different because it hardly feels sci-fi because they're walking around Los Angeles, mm-hmm. but okay. And then I got Dawn at four, and then I've got, how many are left? Dawn is four. Oh, okay, Dawn is four. And then Beneath is five.
Okay.
Beneath is five, mm-hmm. and then I'll go Battle six.
Okay.
Tim Burton 7, and then Conquest last. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
I can't get into those fucking jumpsuits and the chanting and smashing of rifle butts. Conquest, I can't get
There's so
into.
Many things. I guess I liked Beneath a lot because it's really directly a sequel to the first one.
It is, but it's...
It's sillier.
The first half is exactly the sequel to Planet of the Apes that you wanted. I thought the mutants kind of ruined it for me. It's
yeah,
just
see,
silly
I think
now.
They're so crazy and over the
and
top.
And the end is good too. When Taylor and when they
these,
meet up.
By the way,
stuff,
the original
good.
Planet of the Apes movies are all dark as shit.
Oh yeah. In oh fact, my god, the end of Escape is oh my god.
Yeah, it's bleak.
I mean, kids must. I mean, if I was a if I had seen that in the theater, I would have left crying.
All of them.
Yeah,
they're all dark and bleak. I mean,
well,
Planet of the Apes has the happiest ending, and that is he rides away only to discover that his people destroyed
his people destroyed the Earth.
That's great. Wow.
But he's free at least, and
he's free briefly.
He's got a hot bitch. He's got
a hot piece of ass. Yeah. He can train.
Yeah. They are all really dark, and I guess the
ending
movie,
of Beneath is.
The ending of Beneath is
doesn't
terrible.
Get any darker. Yeah, by the way, I love how they say in the documentary like that everyone hated the ending.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
They said, well, the movie was pretty good till we got to that ending. And
well,
we
but wasn't it like the producer didn't want to make another one and they wouldn't get...
well, Heston
didn't want to come back.
Yeah.
So it was just like, just fucking blow the whole thing up. So they did, which is cool. You know, which is cool if they did that.
But personally, what you can see in these Blu-rays, which look great.
Yeah.
Definitely, some of them are a little green.
Yeah, some of... Well, the budget for all five, like,
certainly,
went down by the time they got to
the first disc is the best one. And if you don't... Yeah. This Legacy Collection is $20, so if you're interested, go get that.
Well, that was actually sale price at Best Buy.
You could even get the...
It retails for $40, but...
Okay, yeah. Well, I've seen it on sale for a couple
of
years.
It's been on sale for a while.
Not just at Best Buy, a couple other places. But even if you just want to get the first...
They were selling that for $8.
Get that.
Yeah.
Does that have all the stuff that's on this one?
Yeah. It's the exact same disc, yeah, so...
I stand by the Roddy McDowell. Roddy McDowell's great.
Roddy McDowell's great.
All the there's a lot of great actors in the original series.
Yeah.
Kim Hunter's great.
Kim Hunter's great in Escape. That is her kind of showpiece.
Right. She's great
is Escape.
In
She's great in all
of
them,
Apes,
yeah.
So, yeah.
They don't do a lot in Battle, those two. Or Roddy's not even in that.
Beneath,
some other guy.
It's some other guy in the
Beneath,
costume,
yeah.
Not that you can tell, because he's a monkey.
Yeah.
The voice is a little
He was
off.
A British guy. Right. He got a British guy. But they don't do their characters don't do much in that. Beneath, they're in there for
they,
a few
their
minutes.
Characters go. That's really such a sequel in that.
Yeah.
Their characters go. Oh, let's do exactly what we did in the first one.
Yeah.
And help out the human
with a different guy. But hey, but I really like, you know, I still like I like Dawn. If I had to give it, you know, on a 1 to 10, I'm probably at like a 7-8 somewhere in there on it. I wish I would have liked it to be a 9, but you know, I still really liked it.
It's still worth
seeing.
It's got a lot of cool stuff in it, a lot of charm. The occasional lapses in plotting and just bizarre things that happen for random. I didn't care for Caesar's son's character.
No, well.
What was his name?
Blue Eyes.
Oh, geez. They barely said
it. You have to remember Caesar's mom was Bright Eyes.
And isn't
the chimp that originally James Franco is Bright Eyes. Bright Eyes gets shot, but Bright Eyes had a baby. That baby is named Caesar.
Isn't Blue Eyes they called James Franciscus?
No, they call
him Brent. No, Brent.
No,
called
maybe they
Blue
called.
Eyes.
No, they called Heston Bright Eyes when they first found him.
Yeah, but didn't they call planet. Him Blue
they
Eyes?
They might have called him Blue Eyes. I don't know if that's true.
For a minute.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Well, they pretty quickly figure out Brent.
Yeah,
is
but
smart.
Blue Eyes is
Brent doesn't. Spend
but that's
a
the
lot
thing. That's the thing in these new movies is that when the chimps got injected, their eyes turned green. Chimps normally have brown eyes; they turn green, and that's how you knew that they were intelligent. So that's why you see the cover of Rise of the Planet of the Apes
with the green eyes.
Yeah.
So anyway, overall,
it's really good. It's still a great fiction. It's a great
I love the Apes series. I've always have. I even like the stupid TV show, which is silly.
I probably saw those when I was a kid, but there are some clips on the documentaries here in it. To me, it looks like Dukes of Hazzard with apes. It's like them just running away from apes.
Well,
it's pretty stupid. But
here's kind of what happens on that show.
Yeah,
and I haven't seen them in a long time.
Yeah,
but I did. I watched a couple clips.
Yeah.
Basically, what happens is the pattern of episodes, and it's like such episodic.
Yeah.
70s.
Well, it's two astronauts come down like right. Taylor did
mm-hmm.
On a ship.
John Naughton and anyway.
I don't know.
It's kind of like Ponch and John. There's
yeah.
a guy
right,
with
yeah.
dark
it's a
hair.
Blonde
it's like
guy
Starsky
and Hutch.
Dukes of
Hazzard, yeah.
Starsky and Hutch.
Yeah.
They're running around, but they have to get this magnetic tape from their ship.
Okay.
To fix the ship. And they're like, if we could put it into a computer, we could figure out how to get back home.
Okay.
They got to find an intact computer on the ape planet.
All right.
Good luck with that, shitheads. And then, like, they'll kind of go around and show the apes how they're doing things wrong and use science.
Yeah.
You know, like the apes are so stupid, they're standing around
right.
spearing fish, and they go, here, use a net. How did you capture all of this fish? And so they really make the apes look stupid yeah. in this. But anyway.
Well, they the description that they give in that big documentary that Roddy McDowell owes is that, you know, they run around, they get captured by the apes, they escape from the apes, they run around, they get captured, they escape, and it's kind of the same mm-hmm. pattern over and over again.
Yeah, well, they're still apes.
That's what TV all is. Right. All right. Well, what
you can see a couple downsides.
Yeah.
You can see how cheap the makeup is.
Yeah.
And in Beneath, they ran out of money, so a lot of the crowd shots are just solid rubber masks.
Yeah, and they look terrible. You
and
can
they
see
look
the
bad.
Eyes don't look.
There'll be about five guys in the front,
right? Yeah.
In full makeup, and then behind them you'll
well,
see.
And they did the same thing like in Conquest and that with those big battle scenes, but you know they hit it a lot better. But there's some shots in Beneath that are just like, oh god, that make
I even sense. Noticed like at one point you could see General Ursus's neck. And they hadn't made up
under
his neck.
Yeah,
right,
yeah, right.
Right, right.
Well, there's also like the guys who are wearing clothes, you can see how bulky they are and with like their arms that are exposed and then you know, they're
kind of imagine how well, like, instead of doing a whole ape arm,
yeah,
they've got these sleeves that come down that are like kind of brown and
right.
furry looking.
It's,
anyway,
it's pretty great, though. The whole series is great. I love all the old movies, I love these new movies.
It had to be so hot.
Oh, god,
to make those.
Yeah. And Tim Burton, some of that makeup in the Tim Burton movie, like
the makeup,
the
is
Tim Ross stuff is great. I could do an hour on this fucking Tim Burton movie,
Well. Everything's wrong about it. It's all screwy.
It is.
But the makeup is wonderful.
Well, I thought the makeup, some of it was great and some of it was awful. I thought Helena Bonham Carter was awful.
Her makeup was too human.
It was too human. But I read an interview where they're like, well, we had to make her attractive because they wanted, you know, they wanted Mark Wahlberg to be attracted to her in some way. And I was like, what the fuck were they thinking?
Well,
Wahlberg, by the way, Wahlberg, unlike, you know, Charlton Heston, he looks like he just walked out of the fucking salon. Mm-hmm. Forget about how long he's been sitting on a ship. He comes out with the fucking fresh haircut,
by the way,
no 5 o'clock shadow.
That's
I mean,
another problem.
Oh,
I have
my
that
God,
movie.
That movie. Oh.
I just, Wahlberg wasn't the right guy for that.
And, you know, it's not even Wahlberg's. That's the thing with that is like. Because, I mean, Paul Giamatti is awful in that, as the orangutan.
But if it had been, like, Matt Damon or somebody
but
else,
I don't even,
it would have been a lot better.
But I don't even blame the actors that aren't good in it, because, you know, they were just taking direction. But there's somebody in one of these documentaries on the Legacy Collection says, you know, the problem with Planet of the Apes is, you know, when you put the people in the ape outfits, you don't want them to laugh. Mm-hmm. And that's the problem that the Tim Burton movie is. When you see Paul Giamatti, you just go, that's ridiculous. That's stupid. You see Helena Bonham Carter and go, she's trying to be sexy.
But Michael
that's
Clark
stupid.
Duncan looks
Michael
great.
Clark Duncan is great. Tim Roth is great.
Sure.
Rick Baker did a great job with the makeup, but God, those movies. You know what that movie suffers from?
Yeah.
Something called Phantom Menaceitis. It came out right after Phantom Menace. ILM did the special effects. There's too much green screen. There's too much. It's nonsense.
At least it has real practical makeup effects.
It does, yeah, and that's great. And that's great in there, but
the ending of that movie,
oh, God.
Spoiler,
oh.
Everybody hated it.
Yeah.
I kind of get it.
But it doesn't even make sense. But that movie is a paradox unto itself. It
right.
doesn't make sense
but
at
he
all.
Apparently went to a different time period.
The premise of that movie, and I asked Tenney about it, because we were talking about it, and he's... I said, I think the premise is that...
We're really missing John on this.
Yeah, episode, well, you know, John is on the Planet of the Apes. He's not answering his phone. We called him all day. Is that Wahlberg wasn't on Earth. And that's how that movie, I think, tries to get away with it. He's actually not on Earth. You're supposed to think he's on Earth, and yeah, there's horses and stuff, but he may have not actually been on Earth. And then when he does get back in the ship at the end, he lands on Earth at the Lincoln Memorial. So I don't know. Fucking A.
Hi.
He was supposed to land. By the way, I read that in an early draft of that script, he landed at Yankee Stadium, and when he looked out on the field, it was a bunch of apes playing baseball. But that would be too expensive to make.
I like the Ape Lincoln Memorial, but it's like, what exactly is it? Is it? Did he go it's further into the timeline?
But and it's the Tim Roth ape that is sitting in the chair. Who, you know...
He's the Emancipator?
Know. Yeah, he's General Thade or whatever.
Hey!
Hey, with the apes.
And the ape cops.
Going crazy.
All right, well...
Let's wrap it up.
Then there's Time of the Apes, the Japanese knockoff.
Oh, is there a Japanese knockoff?
Yeah. And Mystery Science Theater did it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it was a series.
How was the makeup in that?
Terrible. You gotta see. Look up Time
of the
Apes.
I'll look
up Time
of the Apes.
It was a series, and they chopped it into a couple, you know, chopped a couple episodes into a movie, and Mystery Science Theater did it, so...
Right.
Look for the Japanese knockoff.
Right, let's get out of here. This is a great one. Oh, that's the wrong song. Let's get out of here with this.
Look at you and your big ape fingers.
Here you go. Come on, Corey. Sing along if you know the words. Come on. Hey, hey! Let's do the ape polka and tell everybody.
Spacecraft falls out of the sky. The clock's wrong.
For
I wonder why and how come all the humans...
This guy's pretty good, though. He tells the whole story of Planet of the Apes.
Galifor attack with monkeys riding on their back. Since Rod Serling left the Twilight Zone, General Ursus wants a war. Dr. Zeus can't stand Gore.
That's pretty good, right?
Charlton Heston can't escape
the Kabbalahs with the Planet of the Apes polka. Go ahead and go to joelradio.net. Leave your comments on there.
Can you find me the Simpsons clip of Planet of the Apes musical?
I can't find it right now.
Put it on the site.
Oh, yeah, I could do that. Yeah. And call 610-552-0746.
I'm on Twitter. Corey Hall Comic on Twitter.
And at Joel Radio is me. So check us out on Twitter. Tell your friends if you like the show. Shout out to the Ford plant.
I'm on Instagram, but only if you want to show me titties.
Oh.
Send the titty pictures.
And apparently the Northwest Territories are on fire, so good luck to Cam.
Was that like when Toledo caught on fire?
I don't know, but
it was a rivering.
The Northwest Territories are on fire. I don't know why. But Cam is posting pictures, so good. Shout out to Cam and Yellowknife. Let's get out of here. Go see Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. You'll like it.
All right.
It's good. Catch you next time.
I just don't understand mankind slipped on a fresh banana peel. General Ursus wants a war. Dr. Zeus can't stand more.